Call today. The number is 1-800-984-6953. 1-800-984-6953.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
I looked at her and it's like I'm looking at a picture of my wife from 20 years ago. It's incredible.
How are ordinary women across America looking years younger? They've discovered the proven breakthrough called Hydroxytone. It erases wrinkles, tightens skin, and makes frown lines disappear from view. See for yourself by requesting a free trial of Hydroxytone today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at international film festivals. Try Hydroxytone risk-free and shed years from your appearance faster than you thought possible.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of Hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-630-3327. But hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-630-3327. 1-800-630-3327.
Credit card debt. It doesn't go away on its own. But what do you do if you're maxed out, in a jam, or going through a tough period? You didn't want to get so deep in debt. But now, how are you going to get yourself out? If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA. They're the specialist at restructuring excessive debt into an affordable plan. Debt Settlement USA isn't bankruptcy or a loan program. They represent you and negotiate significant reductions with your creditors so you get out of debt faster and more affordably than you could on your own. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. Call 1-877-560-8877. Your call is completely confidential and there's no obligation. Not available in all states. You can get out of debt faster than you think. Call Debt Settlement USA right now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, which cost you up to 25% more. That's an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy. With HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system, guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com.
The world famous 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Oh, thank you very much, and welcome everyone. Welcome, Jalene Jordan.
Well, hello, Peter.
And we should tell people that we still have our program. Why? We go off for a week, and we're getting all these emails. Did you get kicked off the air? Is your show at an end?
You know, some people were probably hoping, like, well, you know, a certain few Republicans have out there listening.
Absolutely. This show began 40 years ago, almost.
Wow. When's the anniversary?
Yeah, I don't know. We ought to
do something big for it.
Harvey Ofshinsky, who's now a movie producer, video producer, started the Fifth Estate newspaper and magazine. And so it's been around a long time. It's been part of WRIF. Actually, when WRIF was WXYZ-FM, that's when it began. Mm. So it's been a long time around, and I've been pleased to be part of it for a long time.
Yeah.
Jane, you're clocking in the years now, too.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
That's an odd way to say it.
It is an odd way to say it, but I feel privileged, you know? I mean, you do a lot of things in radio, but this has been one that I have to say has changed my life.
Well,
so,
thank you,
for
Julie,
the better. Yes.
Your being here has changed my life as well.
Oh, Peter, the Mutual Admiration Society. Everyone, don't vomit at once.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, we got to believe that there's probably a percentage of the audience that's saying, wait a minute. What's going on here?
Who are these people?
Where's the music?
Where is my, you know, Van Halen?
Yeah, this is a rock and roll station, but between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. every Sunday night, Monday morning.
For 40 years.
For 40 years. It's been Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, because we're actually both 76, right?
Right.
No, it's had a succession of different people. But anyway, it's a phone-in talk show, and Jalene and I have very strong opinions. We're not, quote, objective, just like no one that does this kind of stuff is, and anybody that says they are objective is a liar. Oh, that was strong.
Well, cruel but fair.
You're right. And it's a phone-in talk show, so you get to call in and make your opinions known just like we do. 313-298-WRIF. And it's this show sometimes, though, in dealing with your calls, is cruel and unfair.
Yeah, so we've been told.
Yeah, we've been told that over and over again. But anyway, you call in, we put you on the air, and we keep you on as long as we want.
Yes, yes. Peter's the one who has the controls in front of him. I'm kind of over here on the other side of the console, so don't blame it on me.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So if you get P.O., it's not Jalene, it's
me,
right?
Yeah, it's all Peter.
So the phone number is 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
If you'd prefer to email us, if you're either bashful or that the phone lines are filled, which they are not right now, you can email us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I have a website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, peterwerby.com, and we have a MySpace page and...
Which really doesn't matter.
Should I not mention that anymore?
I would just say Facebook.
Facebook is there.
Yeah, but, yeah,
which
yeah,
is what? Facebook.com/nightcall?
I think that's it. Or just search for it. And I guess we've got quite a few friends joining up. So.
I think it's Facebook.com/nightcall.
Yeah.
Debbie, if you're listening, and I know you are, actually, she listens to the podcast a lot.
Yeah.
Tell us if we're wrong. The podcast, by the way, will be up by Tuesday at noon. Tuesday at noon. Roger, our friend and colleague is taking the calls at 313-298-WRIF right now. So when you call him, don't tell him your whole story. Just tell him what he asks. And if you don't like what I'm saying, remember, Roger did not say it.
He has nothing to do with it.
He might even disagree with me. I don't know. Here's something that I haven't done any public appearances in quite a while. You're doing them all the time. But as part of your rock and roll...
Yeah, my rock and roll DJ style.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's going to be a special event. Peace Action of Michigan is sponsoring Beatles for Peace. It was 40 years ago today. It's the 40th anniversary release date of Abbey Road. And it's going to be this tribute, the Backbeats, which is the premier Beatles tribute band.
I love those guys.
Yeah. And this is going to be a big fundraiser for Peace Action of Michigan. Now, it's, and I'm going to host it. I'm going to be the MC. And there's going to be some videos and, let me see, no food. But, I mean, it's I don't know. It's not terribly pricey. $30 general seating. It's at the Majestic. And it goes for a good cause, though, for the cause of world peace. And you go to my website, Peter Werby, again, W-E-R-B-E.com, and you'll see that right up there. Right, wait a minute. You have to go to the calendar page, the calendar page. Well, it's, there's a couple of people already waiting, but let me just introduce some subjects. Yahoo News, great hopes for Obama fade to reality. And the first line says, that was fast. The hope and optimism that washed over the country in the opening months of Barack Obama's presidency are giving way to harsh realities. An Associated Press poll shows that a majority of Americans are back to thinking the country is headed in the wrong direction after a fleeting period in which more thought it was on the right track. Obama still has a solid 55% approval rating, but I guess that means that 45%, I mean, that's getting pretty close to 50-50.
Well, you know what? All of this whole progression from the time he was elected until today was, I expected every single minute of it.
Sure.
Do you as well?
Yeah, no. Yeah? Well, I mean, he hasn't discovered a cure for cancer.
Right. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
Well, so, what's he doing?
Now, get this. Overall, according to the Rasmussen poll, 49% of voters say at least somewhat approve the president's performance, 50% disapprove.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to remember, though.
The same ones that didn't vote for him. Okay.
Well, no, it says that if you do all adults, he does quite well.
Ah.
But if you do potentially voting adults, then you get almost this 50-50 split. Well, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, when you start, who was it? The head of the Fed who said that that they've saved the economy. And in the short run, it looks like the overall parameters of the economy have been secured. Doesn't mean that everybody gets their job back. Doesn't ever mean that everybody gets a job back at the wages that they had right. during the 90s or something like that.
The damage was done after 8 years of you-know-who.
Well, the damage is long-standing. The damage
true.
Is very long-standing. I mean, it essentially is the institutionalization of Reaganomics that destroyed the capitalist economy. This was going to be the unfettered market, the so-called free market, which essentially was just a way to let the biggies rip off the middle class and the working class. And it's not only did that happen, of course, with wages stagnating under all the presidents since Reagan and the policies of deregulation and all that, but when it finally, as you correctly said, Jolene, when it came to fruition under the Bush administration, that just allowed anything goes, and the worst, and some of it, I have to say, Clinton signed off on. There were Republican bills, and he should have vetoed them and didn't. I guess maybe he was busy with other
stuff. He was busy being a good Republican. Do we have to go over this week?
Yeah, and he was busy not being impeached and what have you.
Right,
so now we get to this point where, I mean, what are the real possibilities here? The possibilities as things as they currently exist, and I'll use that same word I just used, the parameters, that is the boundaries of what Barack Obama is operating within, are very, very narrow. And I don't think that he could do too much. I mean, this health care system is, or the health care so-called reform.
Oh, he's freaking people out.
Yeah, I don't, well, I mean, if you're not going to go for a full single-payer universal health care system like so many other countries have, you're going to wind up with some bastardized system that probably will make no one happy and won't do the job that that people want it to. And it's interesting. I mean, I keep thinking, yeah, a lot of, you know, so much of the criticisms that people have about Obama are correct. And some of the policies with the national security are just continuations of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
So I think if they said to me, Peter Werby, do you approve of the Barack Obama administration? I'd probably say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is from the left. This is not, I don't know
true.
Where people are coming from. I mean, a lot of friends of mine are just aghast that now what was the Bush wars have now become the Obama wars.
Right.
And it's, we're now waist deep in the big muddy that's now Afghanistan. People are still, there's a few Americans still dying in Iraq, and there's starting to be an increase in numbers in Afghanistan, and no one really notices. I mean, if you're a military family, if you have a son or daughter in the military,
or a talk show host,
yeah, you're very aware of that. And if you've lost somebody or you've had a someone who has suffered the egregious wounds that the U.S. soldiers are coming home with, or if you're a citizen of Iraq or a citizen of Afghanistan, and you have tens of thousands of foreign troops tramping through your village or area, predator toward drones dropping bombs, and you're very aware of it. But so I don't know what to say. Oh, here, let me. I think I've made many ways this point any number of times. I said that Barack Obama is operating within a very narrow boundary of possibilities, and there's no way in the world, for instance, is he going to call for a single payer universal health care. Is what we really need. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Barack Obama is not going to all of a sudden end the war in Afghanistan.
That's right.
He's not going. He can't even marshal his party I mean, he is sitting in that office in many ways because of the United Auto Workers and the rest of the labor union and the tens of millions of dollars they put into that campaign, the person power that they put on the ground to win states like Ohio and all that. And they had a few goals, and those are like all not going there either. So now, and one of the things is that's interesting, the Republican option, the Republican alternative, their alternative programs and policies, and legislation is.
What is it?
I don't think they have anything.
Right.
It's because now, I mean, with them, it is just they're just a 100% corrupt party.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Democrats that are,
highly corrupt.
I don't even know they're highly corrupt, but they still have the corruption in there.
Yeah.
And there's been talk about that some of these arrests last week. But I mean, the Republican Party is thoroughly a 100% racket made up. Half of the people in it are just total whack jobs. I mean, you get these people that, there's now they're saying they've taken the anti-Bush slogan is take back our country, and now they're using it with the Barack Obama. Now,
how original.
Yeah, well, when the Bush regime had stolen two elections in a row, when they had trashed the Constitution, lied us into a war, destroyed the economy, was in bed with every corporation and corrupt CEO, what have you, and was giving away the store, ruining the economy. Remember the old thing? Clinton had a surplus, and now somehow under Bush we wound up with this huge deficit. These right-wingers are saying, well, take back our country. Look what's happening to America. And I was saying, what's happening to them? Not a damn thing.
Yeah. Life is fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if very possibly. I mean, some of these, which I can never understand, some of these people are Republicans, are actually working class or something. What a joke. I mean, these richies that run the Republican Party laugh.
We've got them, all of their little sheeple.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have droves of them.
Yeah. They have the libertarians all met in New Hampshire over the week. And here they talk about this guy who fled the, quote, People's Republic of Massachusetts. That's interesting. The mentality of these right-wing nut jobs goes back into an era that increasingly no one even remembers. That is to say, People's Republic of Massachusetts. People go, well, that's nice. Isn't it supposed to be a republic? And isn't it supposed to be for the people? But this is supposed to be like the Soviet Union. They would have like the People's Republic of China and what have you. I don't even know if people remember that anymore. So he wanted to escape the tyranny of Massachusetts. Well, I was in Massachusetts last week.
It's pretty nice, wasn't
it? Seemed okay.
Yeah.
Seemed okay to me. I mean, I think that they have a universal health. Well, it's not a universal health care in the sense. But it's actually in some ways an example of what people don't want.
Are they upset about gay marriage at all? I mean, how dare Massachusetts do that? Are they all cool with it?
Well, you know what? Libertarians, I would hope, and they don't mention that in this article about the libertarians that are at this big conference, or what do you call it when they're outside? Jamboree or festival.
Oh, it's the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
4 days of beer, burgers, and bonfires.
Yeah. Well, that sounds okay to me.
Really? You don't want the burgers. Veggie burgers.
Veggie burgers. Yeah. Libertarians are, or at least should be, by definition, okay with gay marriage.
Okay.
And most libertarians who we used to say were simply Republicans who like to smoke dope.
You said we.
Wait, I got a mouse in my pocket.
You better correct yourself.
Okay, I.
People are going to.
Oh, I mean, you thought he meant you and me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right.
You're not a libertarian.
No, I'm not. No, I'm saying that's what we used to say about them. That the only thing that distinguished them from mainstream Republicans is let's give it to them. They wanted laws that had victimless crime or crimes with what do they call it? Victimless crime. Yeah, victimless crimes like drugs and prostitution,
gambling.
And all that. Except that's all happening. Gambling's okay. Remember they used to arrest people for gambling. I mean, that was like a that was like a big part of the police apparatus. They would go around and bust people for gambling. And now...
Right? Now we have all of those casinos.
Yeah, and California, I mean, as things move along, that California is thinking about legalizing marijuana so they can tax it. So,
oh, yeah.
So the awful demon weed is...
it's coming around.
Yeah, it's coming around.
I kind of see, you know, I guess I would say when I first started, let's just say, doing talk radio, I never thought that I would see any type of medical marijuana legalization at all. So that's even happened is
sure.
Pretty big to me.
You know, and actually, I'm getting even more of a distaste for listening to right-wing talk radio.
Yeah, why do you do this to yourself?
I don't know.
Peter.
I want to see...
bad for your blood pressure. Yeah,
well, it is. And they are
and
so...
And your soul.
And they are so 20th century, and they are so yesterday's newspaper, except when you have... I mean, if you have Barack Obama, and you have the liberals falling on their face, there's going to be an opening, because people, pardon me, they can't think outside of the boundaries of what is either. So they're going to say, okay, the Democrats, they haven't done what we want, so, well, let's get the Republicans back in. And then the Republicans, of course, will screw everything up again, right?
Yes.
And so they go, oh, well, let's get the Democrats back in. And that's like South America. That's like Venezuela was, for instance. You know, they had a conservative party and they had a liberal party. And the conservative party would screw everybody up. Of course, you know, what they would do would be to put people in jail as well because, you know, the conservative and right-wing regimes are very totalitarian. You know, they used to share it sort of equally, like with the communists, because they were pretty bad, too. They'd put people in jail.
Yeah.
But now it's mostly just, you know, these right-wing or governments or these Islamist governments and what have you. But, you know, we've got to break out of the box. I mean, that's what it's all about. And, you know, and, all right, listening to these right-wingers, they are so, I mean, I think I said this when I had driven to Baltimore and back, and I'm way back. I was listening to all these right wing stations, and in the past, I would always, as they spoke, I would formulate.
Were you driving your wife crazy?
No, she wasn't with me. I drove by myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went there to pick up some furniture. This
oh,
was
right,
about,
right, right. Yeah,
yeah,
that trip.
Two,
okay.
2 months ago or something like that. Anyway, I used to be able to formulate. Okay, there's Rush. You know, there's it's nice. I can't think of their names.
Good.
Good. deal them the cruelest blow of all, right?
Yeah.
And I could always formulate answers. Now I listen to them. I can't think of anything to say.
Why? Because their claims are so outrageous?
They're just nuts.
Yeah.
They're just nuts. I mean, they're just saying the most insane things. And now they are still frothing about this Henry Louis Gates thing. I mean,
they're frothing? I mean, who? I can't believe they're frothing.
Why?
About it.
Why?
Because, in my opinion, and this is, we should explain what this is, the African-American scholar who was arrested at his own home after he called the cops, right?
No, he didn't call the cops. Someone called the cops. Saw a couple black men trying to get into a house.
So they go to his house.
Yeah.
And
they go inside. He's already in there.
And it's his house, and he was one of, you know, big into the civil rights movement. He's a professor at Harvard, right? And they arrest him.
Yeah,
mistaken identity.
And you know, we'll never know what really went on in there. And, I don't even think that it's that important. Because, well, we were really talking about how the right has been using this and manipulating this to attack Barack Obama. But you have this situation where, who knows, maybe Henry Louis Gates really lost it. Maybe he really did tell the cop told him to come outside.
I'm sorry, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you if you were in your own home and they... accused you of robbing your own home?
No.
I would.
Well, here is what Al Vivian said, he's African American in Atlanta, and he's a diversity trainer. And he said what happened to Professor Gates was age old in America, but what was different this time is that it happened in so-called post-racial America. Mr. Vivian, 47 years old, said he had been unfairly stopped by the police in the past, but he lived by an unwritten code for dealing with these incidents, and said that Dr. Gates certainly certainly did not obey the code. And I'm here to tell you, I agree 100%.
What's the code?
The code is,
I think as a white man, it's okay for you to
the
agree.
Code is,
you're giving the white privilege pass, right?
The code,
huh?
Here's the code for African Americans that most, from what I've heard, you know, you're right, I'm a white man and all that, is you frequently use sir when you're talking to a police officer. You never raise your voice.
Whatever.
So,
come on.
Yeah.
Have you seen Cops lately?
What do you mean?
The television show.
Oh, no. Yeah.
For real.
So what is this all about? I mean, maybe Gates went over the edge. I don't know. I wasn't there.
He said something about your mama.
Oh, yeah.
The white guy.
Yeah, he's the sergeant. What's his name?
Sergeant. Let's see. I have it here somewhere. Crowley.
Sergeant Crowley. He said, come on outside.
This is what he says.
Yeah, and Crowley says, and Obama says.
Obama?
I'm sorry. Obama. I'm jumping way ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Obama jumped into it. But
he did.
Gates said, you know, I'll meet your mama outside.
Right. Yeah.
So,
you know, that's
kind of insulting. But
maybe the guy's spunky.
Yeah. Well, he's not that old. He's in his, like, 50s. But he walks with a cane. And the deal was that a police officer arrested him for being disorderly within his own house and on his own porch.
Thank you. And this is what the cop said. He said, from the time he opened the door, it seemed he was very upset, very put off that I was there in the first place. Well, you know what? I would be, too. I'm siding on the side of Mr. Gates.
Well,
Professor Gates.
It doesn't even matter. I mean, you could make the argument, look, the guy was responding to a legitimate call, whether the people at the door were black or white. They saw somebody forcing through a door. There was a police response. And you have someone, let's forget about their color, doesn't like the situation and begins yelling at or raising his voice, you know, talking back and all that. Well, you can do that to a tax assessor. You can do that to a mayor. You can do that to the president into the United States. You can do that to the dog catcher. You can do that to the code enforcement officer. But you can't do that to a cop.
I don't know.
What the hell is up with that?
Exactly, because I've seen you do it, Peter.
You never saw me talk back to a cop.
Yes, I did.
When?
I did.
Where?
At one of our protests that we were at in Royal Oak. Remember that?
I don't, but you know what? I was raised in inner city Detroit.
So I was kind of concerned. I was kind of like, slow down there.
I can't even remember.
I do.
All right, you have to tell me when we take our break. But that one of the things that I know is that if I'm walking down the street and just out of nowhere, a cop pulls up and says, show me some ID.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to say what for. I might show him my ID and I said, can you tell me what this is all about?
But what if they're a fake cop? How about all these stories about the fake cops?
Well, this guy didn't even show his ID to Gates.
Women are supposed to drive directly to...
Yeah. Well, I'm forgetting about that. But I don't understand. You know, you can also assess the situation. I think if a police officer went into some tough working class rock and roll bar or some, you know, hip-hop bar or something like that, and there was really a tough situation and people started fronting him off, he might have to really... you know, not permit that at all in order to remain in
control of the situation.
Yeah, exactly. When you have some old man, and I mean, the guy looks like an old man. He's got, he's late 50s, but he's got a cane and all that. And a guy is, say everything that Crowley said is absolutely correct. And he's saying, yo mama and all of this stuff. The best thing that Crowley should have done is said, hey, I'm out of here. Goodbye.
Crowley didn't like his tone, Peter.
T.S.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, why is it? And you know what will happen? Because here, I'll tell you what. If you're on the street and it depends on who you are. I mean, if you're walking down the street in Birmingham or Grosse Pointe and you get stopped and you're an older, say, you're a middle-aged guy, well, you know, nothing's going to happen to you even if you smart back. If you're young in almost any city, if you're poor, if you're a person of color and you don't give the right answer, very easily you get smacked around.
Yep.
Very easily.
Yes.
And I know all you police officers are listening and say, there he goes again, giving the cops a bad name. And they're going to call me and say, I want you to come out and patrol with me and see what I have to face every night.
I've been in the back of, I mean, I've, As a news reporter.
And also handcuffed.
And as a citizen, okay, once I did. It's true. It was 10 years ago. I had my anniversary.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been, when I was a television news reporter, I would go on these ride-alongs. And I mean, I've seen it. I've seen what they do. Yeah, it's horrible. There's some people who are crazy and working outside of the law in ways that is harmful to other people. Sure.
And, you know, there's some bad situations there as well. I mean, that's understandable. But you know what I never heard was the Sergeant Crowley that went in there and said, I don't know what his first name is. I'm Sergeant John Crowley with the Cambridge Police, and we just heard a report that there's been a break-in here.
Is everything okay in your house?
Yeah. Who are you? I'm Nellie. I mean, first off.
Are you the homeowner?
Yeah. You know, no, I'll just say, who are you? And he said, I'm so, you know, I introduced myself and my badge number is on my badge and I need some information so I can, you know. But it didn't sound like that. I mean, that the sense with so many police is they've always got to be tough to be in control. And what they really create is this enormous amount of resentment. Then, there was somewhere, I don't know if I have the quote here, they're talking to these police who all had this press conference. They said, we're a band of brothers. We stick together. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, man, you're not in Iraq.
It's like the good old boys club,
yeah,
you know, that
yeah,
exists
not,
in every
you're here,
office
you're
around
America. You're not here
America.
For your band of brothers. You're here to serve me. I pay your damn salary.
Yes, yes.
Hello?
Yes.
And I want you to treat me with absolute respect the way I would treat you. And because one of the things that everyone knows, if you smart off, very you could if you don't get knocked around, all of a sudden you could wind up with a ticket. You could wind up with a phony ticket.
Yeah.
You know, so come on.
SOL, we call that. Now, Gates, the professor, says that this is, I like this part. He says if his experience leads to the lessening of any racial profiling, then he would find that enormously gratifying, is
yeah.
what he said. So,
he says time to move on.
And he wants to move on, and Obama invited him and the cop for a beer. I didn't realize the cop part as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's good, and it's very possible. I mean, I don't think the guy was a... I mean, I have no idea. I doubt
I think there's such internal racism in so many white people that yeah. they can't recognize it. I really do. Because this is a guy who also was a diversity trainer.
Yeah. So, right. So he came, saw a couple of guys, and maybe, I mean, let's give worst case scenario. He walks in the house, and he's met with this, what are you doing? Get out of my house, your
yeah.
mama,
mm-hmm.
blah, 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 like that. You know, because someone tries to insult you doesn't mean you have to be insulted.
That's
a concept.
True.
That's an interesting concept.
Yes.
I mean, it really is. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
It's all in the reaction, right,
yeah,
Peter?
Yeah. You can be so calm. I mean, you can be ready to kill.
I understand you're upset, sir. You know, whatever.
Whatever. Yeah, you can be ready to kill, but have just an external calm and politeness because it's not going to hurt you. And the most it's going to, and the best it's going to do is defuse the situation.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, what if he would have said to Gates, hey, look, I understand why you're upset. Can you see things, Professor Gates, from my point of view? I just got a call that said there was somebody possibly breaking into your house. I came here in order to protect your property, and now you're yelling at me. And how do you think that makes me feel? I mean, he didn't say anything.
No,
Gates probably would have said, oh, sorry, let me buy you a beer. They wouldn't even have to get Barack Obama involved.
What a mess.
Yeah, yeah. So I understand it's a job that sometimes is very trying.
Yes.
It's sometimes dangerous, what have you. But I think some simple courtesy beginning. And if you're met with rudeness and anger, so be it. You know, I don't want to say, well, you know what?
You need to be able to deal with that in that job, in my opinion. You need to be able to talk people down and not react the same way they're reacting.
Yeah.
Like,
and
you just said that.
And you don't arrest people because they're yelling at you. And it was a bad arrest because, you know what? They dropped the charges.
They did.
They did. All right, we're going to take a break. But, well, oh, yeah. So the
I was
right
nice
way,
when I was being arrested.
Well, me too. Anything?
He told me I was one of the more entertaining arrestees in his career.
Were you singing one of your songs?
I did not sing.
You were so drunk.
Well, when I was driving, I was singing quite a tune, let me tell you.
Well, anyways.
And I don't do it anymore, people. So don't do it.
How about this? Obama rushes to quell racial uproar he helped fire. Why in the world, in the first place, was it a racial uproar? Why did it get shot into the stratosphere here, rather than just being this little thing? And why is the right wing so absolutely delighted?
Oh, they're delighted by all of this because they can get all angry and stay
indignant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It shows that's what happens when you let one of them into the presidency.
That's what they're saying, too. Yeah,
that is the subtext.
Now, this one last thing on that. Keith, I know we have to take a break, right?
Right.
Keith Horton, a sports and entertainment lawyer in Chicago who is black, said that no matter how much education you have as a person of color, you still can't escape institutional racism, and I agree with him.
Okay.
As a white girl.
Yeah. let me just see. All right, this is too long. I was going to look at an email. I'll do it during the break. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, this is Night Call, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Did I win?
I won?
Thursday.
Dude, are you serious?
All day this Thursday. Exclusively from your walk right in free station. 101.
Who are you?
WRIF.
I love you.
Is your debt getting bigger? Are you falling behind on your bills and receiving collection calls? Well, it's not your fault. Millions of Americans are buried in credit card debt because of a job loss, divorce, medical bills, or just bad luck. But now there's a way you can get debt-free faster than you ever imagined. Call Credit Guard of America today for free information, and you'll learn how you can cut your monthly payments by up to half, lower or even eliminate your interest rates, and stop the collection calls once and for all. For free information, call 1-800-709-6136.
We owed $25,000 to the credit card companies. This year, we're going to be debt-free.
Credit Guard of America won't just help you get debt-free. We'll even show you how to improve your credit status.
They helped me pay off 10 credit cards and rebuild my credit rating.
Call us today to learn how you can cut your monthly payments by up to half and get debt-free. For free information, call 1-800-709-6136. That's 1-800-709-6136.
Hey, back to the show in just a sec. But before that, have you guys heard about this? There's this computer program that literally has newcomers to the internet earning tens of thousands of dollars. See, this program lets you start selling high-profit products on the internet using sites like eBay. Selling stuff like digital cameras and iPod accessories, even plasma TVs. Now, here's the part I think's interesting. You can make all this money selling products that you never have to see or store or pay for. And there's a company that's giving out a CD for free that tells you how to get started with it. The number for the free CD is, it's here. It's 1-800-900-8414. Looks like your computer does the work while you basically collect the money. Seems like an easy way to run a business out of your house. Anyway, to get the free CD, you call Internet Speedway at 1-800-900-8414. 1-800-900-8414.
Are you receiving monthly checks from a lawsuit you won? Are you having trouble paying your bills every month because the settlement money you're getting just isn't enough? Well, there is a way you can get the cash you need now in one lump sum payment. For free information to see how much cash you can get, call Peachtree Settlement Funding now at 1-800-931-7654. Find out how you can turn your future structured settlement payments into the cash you need now to get free of your credit card debt, to meet your rising mortgage payments, to pay your medical bills and other expenses. If you're receiving payments from a lawsuit, call Peachtree Settlement Funding. For your free information, call now 1-800-931-7654. You have bills piling up that need to be paid now. So why wait any longer? Get the future money you have coming to you now when you need it most. For your free information, call Peachtree Settlement Funding now at 1-800-931-7654. That's 1-800-931-7654. 1-800-931-7654.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Angeline Jordan, and we are back. 313-298-WRIF. Let me see. Jeline, when we started doing this together? Like 10 years ago?
Yes.
Something, or a little more, even.
Yeah, actually 11. This is our 11th year together.
And then we began in 2000, a nationally syndicated show. Did that for about 3.5 years. In that time or since, do you ever remember me saying anything good about George W. Bush?
No.
I'm actually going to say something good about him. And this is a misleading headline, although this is not the headline. This says, Bush mulled, I guess it means thought about, Bush mulled sending troops into Buffalo. The Bush administration.
We're talking New York, people.
Yeah, right. The Bush administration in 2002 considered sending U.S. troops into a Buffalo, New York suburb to arrest a group of terrorist suspects in what would have been a nearly unprecedented use of military power. Dispatching troops into the streets is virtually unheard of. The Constitution and various laws restrict the military from being used to conduct domestic raids and seize property. So this is when I talk about Bush trashing the Constitution and trying to overcome any sense of checks on the executive power. These are the kind of things that come out more and more. So what good do I have to say about George, or what good do I have to say about George W. Bush? Bush, this was brought to Bush by Darth Vader, by Dick Cheney, and Bush said no, we're not going to do it. The FBI can do it. That's who properly should make criminal arrests for the violation of federal statutes. But Vice President Dick Cheney and several other Bush advisors at the time strongly urged that the military be used to apprehend men who were suspected of plotting with Al-Qaeda, which, as I remember that, they weren't. They were just these independent Islamists who I don't even know is one of these plots that never even really was wholly formed, but Bush and them had to create an atmosphere of fear. So Cheney wanted to again violate the Constitution, just like he did when the CIA withheld information about the secret counterterrorism program for Congress for 8 years on direct orders from Vice President Dick Cheney, who is not the executive. He has very little duties under the Constitution. But one of them is to protect and defend the Constitution, of which he should have been impeached because he failed. Well, he didn't. It's not like he failed. It wasn't misfeasance. It was malfeasance. He knew that this was his acts were unconstitutional and tried to alter the nature of this government. Where were all these right-wingers then? Were they out in the streets, you know, were they saying, I wanted my country back? No, well, we got to, you know, we're defending us. They kept us safe and all that. I mean, these people really are creeps, you know. They're just, you know, so partisan. It's just unbelievable.
It is. And I want to, before we get some calls, because, you know, we've been on this show for 40 minutes and we haven't taken one call.
We're going to take your call. Hold
next,
on if you're on hold.
William wrote in and said, how can there be health care when they still promote these insane wars? This includes Obama. The people certainly want health care, but at the same time, the ironic part is people want their health care yet are not out in the streets in great numbers while American soldiers are sent off to die for nothing. Nothing! Just to continue the great lie.
Yeah, there's no money for really a good health care system because it's all going in the rat hole of war. I mean, these figures, like the Iraq war, is going to cost us, I use that pronoun advisedly, you and me and the rest of us, $2.1 trillion. And what is Afghanistan going to cost? Well, listen, that takes me off on a whole other subject, but a lot of you have been waiting patiently. So let me get to that. Here's Eric in Lincoln Park. Eric, thanks for being our first caller and being so patient and waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Werby?
We're good.
Okay, good. I am a Southwest Detroit boy. You said you were born and raised in the city of Detroit, and I take up much issue with a lot of the things that you say. I listen to you because you're a bright man, and actually I like your differentiating points of view, yet what do you have to say that's different? You talk about the right-wingers. You talk about Obama. Do you have any ideas about what we can do?
I did suggest some things. I did suggest two things. One, look at what's wrong with our country and our economy, and look where the money is going. I mean, we have these monopolies running the financial system, a lot of the industrial system, the banking system. We have this absolutely massive military-industrial complex. All that money, and first off, that power ought to be decentralized, taken away from these elites so that they can't control our lives and control our economic lives, of which they are. I mean, you're not doing anything wrong, Eric. I'm not doing anything wrong. No one listening to this broadcast is. These elites that have the control of the levers of the financial system who screwed everything up. They got bailed out. Again, they're making profits. They're making profits of billions of dollars. And the average person in Lincoln Park is sitting around wondering whether their industrial job is going to go away or whether their white-collar job is going to be ended and replaced by some computer guy in India.
Like you and Miss Jordan just said, you spent 40 minutes talking and didn't take any calls. I spent about 13 years of my life in prison. And so I got to live around a whole bunch of different people. When I grew up, it was all about, love everybody. My parents were flower children, which is probably a lot the way that you come across to me. Yet you talk about this Professor Gates. This guy, and you expect the police officer. Now, don't get me wrong. I've been abused by the police officer. I've been tasered. I've been put in the hospital, Henry Ford Hospital, by the police. Yet, what is better than that? You say this guy is a professor. He's supposed to be the educated one. He's supposed to be the one with the intelligence and the things that you're saying that you wanted the police officer to have. Yet he tells him, "I'll come outside and meet your mama."
Maybe he's a little offended that the guy is racially profiling him. Is there? Do you think there's any validity to that?
I think it's even more important, Eric. Why? You know what? They asked Barack Obama something about. I don't know if I could get to it quickly, but. They said to him, they asked Barack Obama what was going on here, and I guess I can't find the exact thing, but Obama said, I guess we're not talking about health care, and I guess we're not talking about these wars, and I guess we're not talking about lowering the Michigan and the United States unemployment rate, and I guess we're not talking, now I'm adding to what Obama said. So, in a way, so what? I mean, why are we arguing? I mean, you know what? Every police officer, unless you really did something, you want to tell me that you attacked the police, every cop that tasered you, every cop that put you in the hospital, everybody would say, oh, yeah, he did the right thing because Eric didn't do the right thing, right?
No, but I've had those experiences. You're saying things that, and what I'm trying to say is I've lived through all those things,
yeah.
And yet I'm probably about as right-wing as you can become because I've lived through those things.
Well, you make no sense.
I don't get that.
I don't get it either. It should put you in the system
has beaten you down or something.
Yeah.
Do you know that Karl Marx wrote a book called Das Kapital? You're a bright man.
Hey, you speak German.
Yes, Das Kapital. I have capitalist written on my arm, starting with a K. And what is the second rule of him controlling the populace?
What's that?
The health care system.
You know what, Eric? I'll buy you a dinner at the... at the most expensive restaurant in Detroit, if you can go to Capital, as it's called in our language, if you can see somewhere in this thick book of that analyzes the political economy of Capital, that it talks about the second program is health care. But email it to me. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Thank you. I can't even deal with that. Alex and Warren. Go ahead, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, Pete. Been listening to you since the 80s.
We're good. Thank you.
I'm calling about the health care system and all the cracks we got in it.
Yeah.
I wanted to let you know that there are people who actually do fall through them. I'm one of them. After 10 years of service with the company I work for, I've suffered with pulmonary dysfunction for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten to the point now where I can't go to work no more. Have seizures, so I couldn't drive to work anymore, thanks to a drunk driver back in the 80s.
Oh.
But now my company's health care has run out on me, and I had to go down to a welfare office to see about getting help.
Medicaid.
Let me tell you, it's a humiliating, horrible experience when you realize you're falling through. Yeah. And Obama's doesn't seem to see the big picture of what it really entails to get this thing fixed. I walked in there, I saw more foreigners in that office trying to collect from American government and American people. Well, I saw people like me who actually fell through the system.
Hey, you know what, though, Alex? I wouldn't go there with that. I mean, that begins to be the politics of resentment. You don't know, who was there under what circumstances. Eligibility,
and they're probably all American citizens.
Yeah, right. So
they could very well have been, but, I mean, you know, it's just what I said. It seemed like a very frightening and intimidating experience.
Well, whatever people were there, you know, who you identified as foreigners, which I have no idea what they were suffering through the same experience you were. No one, you're not being denied any health care or put through a humiliating circumstance because of who else is in line. Here's what's going on here. Most voters who earn less than $40,000 annually favor the legislation that's on the being proposed now. Most who earn more than that amount are opposed. And you go, $40,000. Well, you know, that's got to be a tremendous amount. 68% of Democrats favor it. The plan is opposed by 80% of Republicans, though. So, you know, they...
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, and essentially, you got to remember, what conservatives... Look at the word, you know. It's like a proper noun, conservatives are. I mean, I guess it is. But it's... And means that... when you think conservative, and you think about, you know, whack jobs like Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin and Joe the plumber. Is he still around? People like that.
No.
Right? But... Look to the root of the word, conservative. What they want to do is conserve, and the conservatives always wanted to conserve everything. 1776, they wanted to conserve the royalty ruling the United States. The conservatives wanted to maintain slavery. The conservatives wanted to maintain white property owning males as being the only voters. Conservatives... You know, on and on and on and on. The conservatives wanted to have a situation in the 1930s when there were no unions. And conservatives, in this case that I'm going to mention, were Democrats, wanted to conserve segregation. So what they want to do now, and that's why 80% of Republicans oppose this, they want to conserve the health system as it currently is. I was just watching this clip of the Rachel Maddow show, and they had Governor Rick Perry was on saying, this is ridiculous. We're a sovereign state, and we may not even accept federal legislation.
Oh, right.
We may have a state solution. That's where it should be, a state solution. Well, it turns out that the most amount of people in the country who are uninsured are in Texas. And this guy's been governor for 9 years. Yeah, you know, so.
Okay.
Well, Alex, good luck on it. I mean, it is humiliating at all to have to wonder whether the rug is going to be pulled out from under you in any regard. And you know that these 80% of these cold-hearted conservatives who care nothing about other people, and couldn't care less about you. That's why, you know, this guy Eric, I mean, you know, these other conservatives, these other right wing, they laugh at people like him. You know, all right, thank you. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Jeremy. He's in Bridgewater. Hi, Jeremy. You're on the air.
Oh, it's Jimmy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah. I was thinking, God, there's more than one person that lives in Bridgewater.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's about 1,200 of us. First of all, I'd like to thank you for reading my article. That was really cool. I got that email from you. That was awesome.
Okay, great, sure.
Yeah, and this whole deal of Republican versus Democrat, can't you see how ridiculous that is?
Well, it's not as ridiculous. It's not as ridiculous as it used to be. I mean, there is a cleavage coming.
It's just one form of fascism versus another. I mean, we got rid of one fascist, and now we've got another fascist. I mean, what is the difference?
Well, I thought Barack Obama isn't being very effective. Of course, I guess neither were Bush and Cheney either. They didn't really ultimately get to do what they wanted either.
Oh, thank God they didn't do exactly what they wanted. My God, they were destroying the country. But this guy has spent more money in as many months as Bush was there for 8 years.
That's not fascism, though. I mean, look, another phrase to describe fascism is corporatism, where corporations rule. Well, it's been no different since Ulysses S. Grant, or maybe even before that. I mean, but probably Grant marks the point at which corporations began to fully dominate the American economy and the political system, right?
That's exactly what is happening in this country, and if we don't wake up and stop it, we're going to go down.
Well,
that is the absolute truth.
I mean, I tend to agree with you. I don't think that the motivation of Barack Obama and many Democrats, although there's enough probably financial corruption to make one wince there as well, it's what I said. They operate within very, very small parameters with the boundaries. And they don't feel they have the political space to move outside of that. If we started moving, and started saying, look, this is how things have to change. This is how we have to unravel from the corporate system. This is how we have to stop having elites dominate every aspect of our lives. So we're just kind of at best pawns in the game. We're just like chips of wood on these storms. Sometimes the water's kind of calm, and we think, oh, things aren't so bad, like during the 90s. And then all of a sudden, things go to hell. But it's still too much of a crap game.
Well,
right?
I got that. It's called the U.S. Constitution. If they just followed that and did exactly what the Constitution said, we would sit here and be prosperous and be able to pay for our own health care. We'd be able to pay for our own homes and our own. We wouldn't have to worry about them anymore.
What is in the Constitution that deals with the economics that would?
Absolutely nothing. That's the key. The government gets involved in the economy. They screw up every single thing that they touch.
You know, that's Ronald Reagan. I mean, the corporations left or business, unfettered capitalism left to its own devices was so destructive, did so much harm to tens of millions of people between, say, the 1830s and when there was a modicum of controls through when they abolished child labor and put in safety and health standards and gave people the right to unionize and 100 other things, that if it wasn't for government control, we'd all be working 12 and 14 hours a day, 6 and 7 days a week, and our 8-year-old kids would be in the industrial plants. Right. I mean, you cannot have unfettered capitalism because it has allegiance to one and only one thing, and that's profit.
Well, yeah, but not if nobody buys their products.
But come on, Jimmy, that's the libertarian argument. People say, oh, you know, that if left to the free market, well, there's no such thing as a free market because of the tendency of capital to become monopolies. And it happens. You see that in American history. You know, I got to go. I'm sorry to cut this so short. We'll take it up another time. I got to get these commercials in while
yes.
It's still Sunday.
Right now.
All right. So... That's easy. Go ahead.
There are a couple of open lines, 313-298-9743 or 313-298-WRIF. Please call.
I'm back.
Oh, good.
So is my voice. Thank you, Jillian Jordan. We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101-WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Keep it locked on 101-WRIF all this weekend for your chance to win tickets to WRIF's first annual Badass Concerts featuring Mudbound, Black Label Society, and more. Saturday, September 12th at Freedom Hill Amphitheater. Tickets available right now at LiveNation.com, the Freedom Hill box office, and Ticketmaster.com. The Riffs Badass Blowout Weekend.
Visit and win.
From 101-WRIF. Everything that rocks. Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
Double rock.
See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Did you know that most credit counselors are working for the credit card companies? It's true. They're practically collection agencies themselves. Don't turn over your financial future to them, because I've got a system that can eliminate your debt once and for all. To prove it, I'll send you a powerful free tape today.
I owed over $30,000 in credit card debt, and today, only a year and a half later, I owe no money to the credit card companies.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't consolidate your debt, it eliminates it, using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
I'm completely debt-free now, thanks to John Commuta.
Don't hand over your future to credit counselors. Call now, and I'll rush you my free tape today. Call 1-800-600-5460 for your free tape. Call 1-800-600-5460. 1-800-600-5460.
How would you like to lose weight for free? Hi, I'm Steve Bostic for Right Size Smoothies.
And I'm Scott Johnson. For a few months now, we've offered an incredible deal to the public. Use Right Size Free for 2 full weeks and see how much weight you can lose before you pay for them.
But some of you haven't called, so we're offering one last chance to take advantage of this popular offer. These people called.
I lost weight within a couple days. Now I'm down 120 pounds.
A free trial sounded like a no-brainer, so I called. Within the first week, I'd lost a lot of weight.
I knew within a few days I finally found the answer. I've lost 44 pounds.
Right Size Smoothies contain an appetite manager that knocks out hunger cold. You'll see results early, so you'll know you can do it.
How much weight can you lose in 2 weeks? Try Right Size Free and find out. You could be our next testimonial.
For your free 2-week trial, call 1-800-644-1454. 1-800-644-1454. 1-800-644-1454.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the only attorney-driven program dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF in WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Jolene, you're listening to Night Call, the Riffs award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
All right, if you're ready to testify, 313-298-WRIF at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. I'll be interviewing, actually playing an interview I did earlier, with the distinguished historian Howard Zinn. His People's History of the United States has sold over 2 million copies.
Wow. Now,
this is absolutely amazing. And, you forget, time marches on. Howard is 85 years old now.
Wow.
Yeah. And
doing a lot of good work for a lot of years.
And now he's just published A Young People's History of the United States, sort of a little easier to read for younger people
of
history.
I would give anything to send a copy to my niece and nephew, but I would probably be truly banished from the family if I did that.
Also, Jim Narakis, who's the editor of Extra, it's the publication of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and he's talking about the disappearing print medium.
Well, yes, it is. Yeah, we know that here in Detroit, don't we?
Yeah. You know, actually, that paper at least is looking pretty good, those two papers. But we've been really taking calls slowly. Let's go back to our calls. Here's Jerry in St. Clair Shores. Jerry, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. You're on WRIF. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Jolene.
Hey.
I just like to put a little context into this whole Gates police thing.
Sure.
I think we have to look at it much in the way we look at fire. Everyone understands that we need to have fire to heat our homes, to cook our food, to provide energy, but yet we also understand the consequences when fire gets out of control. And we go through the great lengths to keep it under control because we understand the disproportionate impact it would have. It's the same with law enforcement. We're a nation that's founded on the principles of the rule of law. It only stands to reason that we have to have people with the power and the authority to enforce those laws. But when the people that we appoint take that power and authority and use it to place themselves above the law, that's the very definition of being out of control. And when you have a man in his own home, and a man's home is his castle, and proclaim that he is an apparent, the only that is, he identifies himself correctly and claims that that is his home, and the police, the only responsibility the police have at that point is to turn and leave. And when the police claim that that respect for them takes precedence over the respect of the public or the individual, or the police claim that even their safety takes precedence over the safety or the safety of the individual, that is the definition of a police state. And when you have a nation that has 5% of the world's population, yet we hold something like 20% of the world's incarcerated, there's only two conclusions that can be drawn from that. That we are either the worst people in the world, or that we have a law enforcement justice system that is out of control. And the nerve that these police organizations have to ask the President of the United States, the representative of the free people, to get on his knees before the police industrial complex and issue an apology, that makes my blood boil.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Thank you very much, by the way. I couldn't have said it that well.
I'll tell you, Jerry, fabulous. I did not like it that Barack Obama backed off, because I think that Sergeant Crowley did act stupidly, because he could have defused the situation simply by leaving, but, you know, there was too much ego there. Nobody tells a police officer, I'll meet your mama outside and get out of my house, and making all sorts of, and you could go anywhere with it. Like I say, maybe Gates was totally over the edge, saying totally inappropriate things, saying things about the guy that wasn't true. I can't think of a better reason for the police officer to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not the, you know, the say. And then, and obviously, I don't remember who exactly, whether it was the police or the whoever issues warrants or whatever, but they said there was no crime committed. So that gives you an idea, at least in my mind, who was right. All right, Jerry, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right, we kind of let him. People are going to say, now you let him talk. You didn't even interrupt. So there's somebody that's going to...
Well, he was on a good roll. Sometimes people stop.
Yeah, but they know...
You can't stop. Once she starts, just keep going.
Here's Joe in Ferndale. Joe, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter and Jolene. How are you both?
Good.
Great, Joe.
Hey, I agree with that last caller, but, you know, when you guys started this off, Jolene, I mean, with you just saying it was racist on the cops part, I don't agree with that at all. I mean...
Are you white?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, that makes sense.
I don't even know if that's fair.
Yeah, you, Peter, no, I can't believe I'm more hardcore on this than you. I can't believe it.
But, Jim, I totally agree with that last caller, but I think if it's a white guy mouthing off to the police, they're going to take just as much offense.
I don't think that's the issue. I don't.
Well,
that's just me.
It depends.
I think that's irresponsible of you, Julian, to say that. It didn't even sound like you understood the story when you started talking. You said, oh, did Professor Gates call the police to their own house? I mean, it sounded like you were picking up on the story as Peter was talking about it.
No, I wasn't picking up on the story.
But, and again, I agree with that last caller and how Peter was talking it out, but to just call it racist, I don't agree with that. I think that cops do have the ego issue, and you got to show them the respect. But I think Professor Gates is at fault also. He shouldn't have been talking the way he was. I mean...
Well, wait a minute. Why? I mean, he shouldn't have. Why? I mean, there is sort of a general, I guess I would say, a general standard of the way we should comport ourselves. Many people violate that. I mean, think about road rage and all that. I mean, people, you know, I'll do something that I didn't think was wrong, and people will scream at me and throw me the bird and all that, and I just kind of look at them, you know, like, you know, and their face is contorted with rage, like I had done something of great significance to them. And if somebody comes up to me, I mean, I've had people come up to me very, very rarely over the years and say, I heard your show and it sucks and you're so stupid and, you know, and I can't believe you put your photograph
on. Someone called you ugly.
Yeah, they said, how did you have the nerve to put your ugly face on the internet? And what someone else said, you have the worst voice I've ever heard in radio and all that. And I go, whatever, you know. Yeah.
And I, you know what? There is also a story that I read today in the New York Times that threw me off, because there's another retired professor, this one of philosophy and English, who is black, named Ralph Medley, right, who had this happen to him where he called the police and they arrested him. So
yeah,
it has happened and it will again.
You get what she's saying? We were looking at another story. This is professors arrest test belief on racial progress. And it talks about this retired professor, or you just said that, who was arrested on his own property when he had called the police. In fact, this happened to him a couple of times. Do I think that race played a role? I have actually no idea. I don't know. I mean, you do have a cop that taught about racial profiling, how not to racially profile.
But you know, there's a lot of like shrinks out there who are giving advice who are
crazy,
way crazier than any of the people they treat. I mean, you know, it's like the plumber whose pipes never fit, or you know.
But we hear you. So thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
And I accept your criticism. Everyone has a right to their own opinion about this. That's what this show's about, right, Peter?
Absolutely. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Joe in Warren. Thanks for calling 313-298. Did I just say that? To say the phone number? 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air, Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's me. I'm on.
You're too, and you're on.
Oh, okay, great. Hey, now, I kind of want to change the subject for you a little bit here.
That's okay.
I'm a professional truck driver.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And I believe you have a great show. I love Julene and Peter. You're great. Great show. And I just want to say that I've heard in the past you speaking about driving through Maryland and the problems that you had over there.
Yeah.
And when I drive through Maryland, I mean, I don't even try to drive through there because the cops have given so much problems ridiculously that, I mean, if I can, I will just drive around it. But
That's tough if you're going to Baltimore.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's right. I'll drive through, say, Delaware and Pennsylvania. I'll drive further than I have to just to avoid them guys, because they give a lot of problems to the truck drivers. But I got to say that the majority of the patrolmen out there are very good people, and they're very helpful.
Sure.
Now, every now and then, they do kind of give you more problems than what, say, normally you should encounter. But you got to realize, they're doing a job. They could get shot or something really unexpected could happen. They got to be very careful. And if you treat them nice, chances are they're going to treat you fair. Okay?
Well, wait. You know, I don't even like that equation. I mean, for one thing, I treat everyone nice. I'm a nice guy.
Usually. You are, most of the time.
Most of the time. So I have my moments. But why? I mean, that goes back to this one African-American who said that Gates broke one of the first rules, and that's one of the first rules of being black. And that is, let me see if I can find this again.
Raise your voice.
Don't raise your voice and say sir very frequently. Now,
I am not going to do that.
Why? I don't call anybody sir unless
I'm not going to raise my voice or call him sir.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, unless I'm looking down the barrel of a gun.
Or unless I'm talking to Elton John.
You can call, because he is Sir Elton, right, or Sir Paul, or somebody
right.
like that.
Right, I'll
but
do it then.
The point being, why are we dealing with people in a manner that they're so volatile, potentially.
That we may set them off,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we don't call them Sir, and if you say, why are you stopping me, or, you know.
Did I do something wrong?
Yeah, I mean, what happens, I mean, if there's like a stop, you know, on the street, I mean, if you're walking, and, you know, they say, well, you know, just out of nowhere, and come and say, show me some ID, and you say, why? Well, boom. I mean, you're in a world of trouble. I mean, you could say, I'm not going to show you my identification until you tell me why you are asking me for that. Identify yourself and tell me the situation. You know where you, I mean, I'm not going to do that. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull my wallet out. You know why? Because if I say that, I'm going to wind up down at the precinct with some charges of disorderly conduct.
I'll come get you, Peter.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your call. Listen, most of the police are decent. They're doing their job. It's not a very high paying job in many cases. I mean, you know that some of the officers are making like $25,000 a year
and putting their lives on the line.
Yeah.
For sure.
And by the way, it's not the most dangerous job. in terms of, you know, there's like firemen and
like iron worker.
Tons of others.
Yeah.
There's a lot of injuries when you look deeper into it. And this is I'm not making a joke. A lot of police injuries are hand and finger injuries.
Okay.
Yeah. And look, they got a job, you know, and I don't know why anybody has to be, you know, loved so much. I mean, I'm sure this is not going over well with the many police officers that are listening. They don't like criticism at all, right? And that's not a good thing. I mean, the complaint department should always be open with everyone.
It is on this show.
Yeah.
Come on.
And I told you, people say I'm ugly, I have a terrible voice.
And none of it's true. You guys haven't seen him in person.
Communist, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a communist.
No.
I'm much more radical than that.
You are. And ever since Obama came into the presidency, you've been a socialist. I mean, it just depends.
That's what they, yeah, now, yeah.
There's something different every
week.
They
say he's a socialist. He's
someone wrote us and said we are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What goes for socialism, say, in the European northern tier countries of all these state programs that make life so wonderful for these people that, with long vacations, paternity leave, paid paternity leave, paid paternity and maternity leave, all sorts of programs that make life unlike in this country, and you don't have people running into classrooms and churches and mowing people down. Come on, folks. There's something really wrong here. And wanting to conserve it, being a conservative, wanting to conserve things as it is pretty sick, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's continue onward. Here's Pauline in White Lake. Pauline, you don't really want to talk about health care, do you? That's important.
Just for a second.
Okay, go ahead. I'm only kidding.
I enjoy your show. I listen to it from time to time. My issue is I know someone that's in a prison, and they're getting better medical coverage than I am, and I'm on disability.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got a notice a month ago saying that they cut our vision, cut our dental, cut our foot care. And I was just talking to my cousin on the phone yesterday, and he had some foot problem and went right in and got it took care of.
Sure.
And I was just told I'm not getting covered. I'm not a criminal. I'm not doing life. How are they getting better medical coverage than the people out here working or people on disability? That don't seem fair.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be that they shouldn't get good health care. It means that everybody should get that type of health care. That we should, that no serious politician challenges Medicare. And that is the quintessential socialized medicine, the single-payer universal health care for people over 65 or 62 or whatever it is, 65 at least. And it works well. It's got low administrative costs. You're not having insurance companies trying to deny you coverage. They're not cutting back on it. And what a universal health care system would be the extension of Medicare to all of us. But, of course, now I don't even think we could afford it. But, Pauline, you deserve better. We all deserve better. So good luck on it. And here's Biden, by the way. I could have probably just, this could have been something like, I could have said, who said this 4 years ago?
Oh, right.
But it's actually Biden today. He said that more coalition troops would die in Afghanistan, but the war was, quote, worth the effort. He's speaking to her of Ukraine and Georgia, not down south, but, you know, over by the Soviet Union. He said that the lawless region along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border was a place that, if it didn't get straightened out, will continue to wreak havoc on Europe and the United States. Well, one of the reasons that it is a place that isn't straightened out is because of the continual presence of invaders going back to the 19th century with Britain through the Soviet Union, and now the next imperial forces. We don't like to think of our troops, our sons and daughters, our neighbors, as being imperial troops, but again, like I always say, you're in a village in, hey, how about in Michigan, and suddenly the Chinese troops come through. And they've just bombed a third of your little town. Was it Jimmy from Bridgewater? That 1,200 mm-hmm. people. That's kind of sometimes Afghan and Iraqi villages are like that. And a sorry about that incident occurred. And, you know, a whole wedding party of about 40 people was blown apart by a predator drone. And then these people that don't speak your language come through and tell you in Bridgewater, Jimmy, we're here to liberate you. We want to get rid of the awful capitalists, say, or whatever. Well, and so what about the idea that if we don't get rid of the Taliban, who, you know, that we're going to suffer more terrorist attack? That's not how you get rid of terrorist attack, but... And how about this? The American-led mission in Afghanistan is all but abandoning efforts to destroy the poppy crops that provide the largest source of income to the insurgency, and instead will take significant steps to wean local farmers off the drug trade, including maybe paying them. So this is where our money will go. Mm-hmm. This is our tax, mine, yours, Jolene's, everybody's. It's working. Your parents or whoever. And,
well, they think it worked in Iraq, right?
Yeah. Well, they did kind of buy everybody off, and that, yeah, of course, is wind up. That's why we can't afford the health system we deserve. That's why we can't afford the school system we deserve. That's why urban schools look like they do. They're so underfunded, and they got 35, 38 kids in a class. Yeah. That's why the roads suck. That's why, that's why roads collapse, because we're paying off insurgents in Iraq.
To not go attack other people.
Yeah.
And
the same thing may happen in several pea-paying farmers. The strategy will shift from wiping out opium poppy crops, which senior officials acknowledge had served only to turn poor farmers into enemies of the central government in Kabul. Let's see, somewhere or other, ultimately, farmers must be persuaded to plant other crops, including wheat for domestic consumption and pomegranates and flowers for export, except it doesn't bring in that much money. Richard C. Holbrooke, the administration's special envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan, briefed allies on the shift last month and has said that, quote, the Western policies against the opium crop, the poppy crop, have been a failure.
Huh. Mm.
And right now, and there's some of you out there, I've got to be a few of you, that are either heroin users or heroin abusers, and maybe you're worried, but Afghanistan supplies 90% of the world's heroin, and the drug trade is estimated to account for about half of Afghanistan's economy. So we're going to pick up the tab for that, right? In the meantime, just keep on producing that smack, right?
Right.
Okay. Biden is in Tbilisi, Georgia. Again, that's not near Atlanta, but that's right over a country alongside of the butts up against Russia. He gave a rousing speech. I mean, how can these people say these things? This is worthy of another vice president by the name of Cheney. That Biden gave a rousing speech at Georgia's Parliament building last Tuesday, raising his voice to a shout in denunciation of Russia's, quote, 19th century notion of spheres of influence, and urging the world not to formally recognize the separatist territories of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. He received standing ovations, one after another. Let's get this. He is on the doorstep of Russia, come 6,000 miles away, denouncing Russia for having its 19th century notions of spheres of influence.
Why are we poking that nest? I don't get it.
And why the United States is in Iraq? Yeah. It's in, and wants that as a sphere of influence, as the largest embassy in the world, cost us, you and me, $1 billion to build. And now also has this puppet government in Kabul. We are funding the Saudis to the tune of billions of dollars, even though they have this, they're using, according to Amnesty International, they are using the campaign against terrorism as a facade for a sustained assault on human rights. And it says, let's see, rich in oil, Saudi Arabia, Amnesty International accused the Saudi authorities of using torture to extract confessions and of using their powerful international clout to get away with it. They're under great Western pressure to combat terrorism, since you do remember this, right, that 15 of the 19 hijackers on September 11th were from Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
in Kyrgyzstan, again, you have this dictator. Let me see, where is his name? Bakayev, I would believe you say that, who uses torture and the arrest of all of his opponents and what have you. And strategic issues, not abuses, are now the Obama focus in Kyrgyzstan. So it all just sounds a lot like what's gone on before. Where's the change? That's what I want to know. So when you see... Dear liberal friends, when you see these polls and say that a great numbers of people, in some cases even majority, do not give Barack Obama approval ratings, put me in there, okay? So it's not all just right wing. We expected more than this. 313-298-WRIF, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. And here is Joe. Joe's in Centerline. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing good.
Well, I've got some things I'd like to get off my chest. I've been listening to you for a while now, and
sure.
Everything I hear you talking about, it all relates to one thing, every single bit of it.
What's that?
Agenda 21.
Agenda.
Which was signed by George Herbert Walker Bush in 1992 without the consent of the Congress.
What was it?
And it is the New World Order. It is a legitimate thing. It is not a conspiracy. I have found it online. You can go there. You can see exactly what they're doing.
Joe, because you find it online does not mean that is particularly true. And you're right. Poppy Bush did use the phrase New World Order, which freaked everybody out. But doesn't that say that on the dollar bill in Latin?
Or? I guess it's a United Nations program.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And we are involved in it.
Well, how does it hurt us? What does it do?
It's not really hurting us. It's all about environmental, economic, demographic controls. It's all about sustainability. And everything that has been going on since it's been signed in, as our country being a part of it, has been a part of it. From us going to war for the UN to us...
Wait. We've never gone to war for the UN. We've dragged the United Nations, in some cases, along into U.S. wars, like in Vietnam. But, you know, this is conspiracy theories. And, you know, that there's this feeling that great forces are controlling us, that the average person, like you and like me, have no control over whatsoever. That is to say that rather than a democratic or, these people that isn't a democracy, it's a republic, whatever, that the popular forms of government that we the people ought to be the final arbiters of what happens in our lives, from the economy and politics and wars, everything you're saying, Joe, ain't there. It's true. And the elites of the country and the elites of the world frequently do conspire for their own interest, and the rest of the population be damned. But, I mean, it's not these individual,
programs that they're signing on to.
Yeah.
This seems like
it's much greater
protection of the oceans and freshwater resources, keeping toxic chemicals out of the water.
Sounds communistic to me.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Bill in Rochester. Bill, hi. You're on the air. Bill. Hi.
Oh, hey. Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'd just like to comment about the police state that you guys were talking about earlier. One of the earlier callers, I don't remember where he was from, but he kind of hit the nail on the head, and I'd have to agree with him. But one of the things that I'd like to talk about is, you know, the police and how they come to situations. One example is domestic violence. I'm sorry, I've been waiting a while to get my time.
It's okay. By the way, I don't think this is a police state. We're talking about inappropriate actions on the part of some police. I mean, a lot of, you know, police have come a long way. Let me just tell you while you're, considering what you're going to say. I was in New York. I'm trying to think when in April. April. And there was a demonstration of students at a university called the New School. And there was a big flap about the fact, did this New York police officer push this student down, kind of like just shoved him down to the ground? Well, I mean, this is a real change. I mean, I was reading some accounts of things that would happen like around 1912, 1913 to labor organizers, and they would get arrested at a picket line, and the New York police would bring in these labor organizers and just beat them almost half to death. So the fact that we've gotten to the point now that there's a concern even when a student is pushed down inappropriately, I mean, you know, we've come a long way. I mean, the police have made strides. I mean, there's still a lot of guys on forces that create a lot of problems, both you know, for the public and for their fellow officers. But there has been some progress made. But go ahead.
You know, I think it has to do with a lot of that. When the cops go to a situation, a lot of their power to make a decision is out of their hands. The upper echelon that they have to answer to, you know, if they don't take somebody in for a domestic violence, whether or not they think that, you know, if they go there and they calm the situation down, if they don't bring that person in, if they go back an hour later, you know, they're looking at lawsuits. You know, why didn't you bring them in the first place? That cop can't go there and make a reasonable decision and say, I see this family. This is a first domestic violence offense. Why, you know, we don't need to bring them in. We came down. We calmed the situation down. You know, let's let them be. But if they don't do that, then the people that they have to answer to are going to look at them and say, your job is on the line now. You know, if we have to go back, you're...
Well, I agree with you. I wouldn't like to make those decisions. That's why I took an easy job in radio. I mean, I you know, where my position in life now, in the suburb that I live in, all the experience I have with the police are very, very positive. When I've been out in big demonstrations, they've been less than positive, let me say. I've seen some horrendous things done by police officers just out of rage and dislike for protesters. When I was young, lived in a very poor neighborhood, we used to get kicked around by the cops all the time, and arbitrarily. They thought they were the law. They're not the law. The laws are, on books. I mean, but, you know, the idea of, of police enforcement back then and back in Detroit was that you had to have these S-kickers out there or the population would get out of hand. Well, all it did, of course, was create situations like the 67 riots and what have you. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Peter Rick wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, couldn't Gates have just whipped out his driver's license and proved it was his house? Gates' side of the story is that he did show picture ID. At the door. And he said, racial profiling is wrong, but it exists for a reason. I don't agree with that, but because it exists because it's racism. But he says, I'm not black, but I have long hair. And it's true. I think there is a long hair thing, you know, that they think you're they're on drugs or whatever. So I get you there. But he said, if we were going to leave, our love child that we had, Peter, if we were going to leave the child in a room with what? two pit bulls, or this is an imaginary story, or a room with two golden retrievers, which room would you choose? What?
All right. And he said, thanks for that. Can we move on?
Don't be profiling now, you guys. Where do we profile? Only Republicans.
That's right. All right. All right. We're going to take a break. I got a number of people. I think we may have a few police officers as well, so we'll get to them. So hang on. 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock. The way you want it.
See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help, guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Credit card debt. It doesn't go away on its own. But what do you do if you're maxed out, in a jam, or going through a tough period? You didn't want to get so deep in debt, but now, how are you going to get yourself out? If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA. They're the specialist at restructuring excessive debt into an affordable plan. Debt Settlement USA isn't bankruptcy or a loan program. They represent you and negotiate significant reductions with your creditors so you get out of debt faster and more affordably than you could on your own. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. Call 1-877-560-8877. Your call is completely confidential and there's no obligation. Not available in all states. You can get out of debt faster than you think. Call Debt Settlement USA right now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
Attention! Hydralyze is currently seeking participants with dark circles and puffy eyes. If you have dark circles or bags around your eyes due to heredity, fatigue, or aging, you are eligible to see results and participate in the Hydralyze trial. Hydralyze was introduced to improve delicate skin around the eyes and now has been shown to eliminate dark circles and bags. It effectively diminishes even dark circles caused by heredity. To participate in the Hydralyze trial and see results risk-free, call 1-800-496-2620. Fragile capillaries around the eye can leak, allowing blood to pool beneath the skin like an ugly bruise. But right now, you can join the thousands of people who have seen their dark circles fade away, watched as bags literally disappeared from view. Participate in the free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of your dark circles or bags around the eyes, you are eligible to participate and experience results with Hydralyze. Call this number today, 1-800-496-2620. Once more, that's 1-800-496-2620.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Jalene Jordan and I will be taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF up until 1 a.m., and then I'll be playing an interview I did with historian Howard Zinn. He's got a new book out, A Young People's History of the United States, sort of a simpler account of his best-selling People's History of the United States. 2 million copies sold. You can read about it right now on my the interview on my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com. Let me see what else is on there. A statement by Jimmy Carter, who resigned from the Southern Baptist Church.
He did.
Said he's losing his religion for equality. And also there was this incredible article in Mother Jones magazine. I think it's motherjones.com. If it's not com, it's
.org. It is .org.
Oh,
no, I'm not sure. It's either one.
And like Ayn Rand. People are back. I mean, and
we talked about this. Brad Pitt and Angelina are into Ayn Rand.
Stupid philosophy, horrid prose, but I put she's back.
It's amazing how through the years of doing this show that people, that it's just every once in a while, there's, have you heard of Ayn Rand? Yes, yeah. We know.
All right, let's get some more people on the air. This is John in Detroit. Hi, John. It's Peter and Jalene.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going good.
Hey, real brief. I'm a community development person on this far east side of Detroit, and it just so happens that I got involved in this education that gets your past out of your history, and I was Facebooking Warren Evans, our new police chief, about this possibility to introduce this to the Detroit Police Department. Didn't didn't get a response from him immediately. 10 minutes later, I was up at our mobile recycling pickup on a municipal lot in the city of Detroit. And I pulled up to set up because I run the place. And there was these SUVs that were kind of scattered about the parking lot. And so I just, you know, I pulled up and started setting up and talked to the guy that was with me. And I said, you know, what's going on out there? And he said, well, I think it's some kind of police training. And I said, oh. And I saw them. They were just kind of standing around. And one guy looked like he was, you know, taking off or putting on a bulletproof vest or something. So I just kind of surmised the situation for a few minutes. And finally, I walked up to the guy, and I said, hi, I'm John. And I said, we're getting ready to, you know, have our recycling start, and we're going to have a lot of cars coming up here, and I just wanted to let you know. And the guy turned and looked at me, and he said, look, we're the police, and we're, and went on and just got in my face, said, and we're not moving. And I'm just like, oh, so I just kind of stepped back, and I said, well, okay, cool.
Sure.
Have a nice day.
He took your advice, Peter.
And, you know, I walked back up in the semi where we collect the stuff, and I said to the other guy, I said, you know, and they wonder why people shoot at them.
Well, I don't think that's, I mean, it would seem to me that...
Or to talk back to them.
Yeah, well, nobody, I mean, people usually don't, I don't know, I mean...
I was just blown away.
Yeah.
Were people able to come in and...
About 10 minutes later, they moved, they took off, and later on, I found out the guy that runs the recycling program, and he's actually running for city council, pulled up, and he's a friend of mine, and he said that he drove by, and they had raided a house, and it's the house where they, I'm sure, where they raided and got the guy that was raping all the women on the east side.
Oh, this just happened.
And you know, I understand that these guys are under a lot of pressure, but these guys were standing in the parking lot for over 15 minutes. There was no lights. It was totally unmarked vehicles. And that's no way to treat the public. You know?
Agreed.
Because they didn't have it barricaded off. They were just standing around. And I was polite and introduced myself and just said, and
well, it doesn't seem, you're right, it doesn't seem the way, you know, the old thing you can get, what is it, you can get more flies with honey than vinegar,
yeah.
But who wants flies?
It's true.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your story.
I've been yelled at like that before, you know, trying to get somewhere where I they don't want me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking about
breaking
and entering. I'm talking about being like at a political protest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're talking about high stress job. And but it would seem to me to be the stress could be diminished if in a maybe all these. Never mind. Let's take another call. Here is Greg is in New Baltimore. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you, Peter?
Good.
I imagine you probably got a lot of cops waiting to talk to you.
Actually, it turns out you're the only one. I thought there were more, but you're just...
Well, I'll tell you, I'm surprised because the only time I ever call is when you guys start talking about cops. this last instance you talked about with this guy that he was going to his own house and
yeah.
The police showed up. Does anybody really have any of the true facts of what happened in there? Because, you know, I know for myself when I go to a house on a burglary call, first of all, my adrenaline's already a little bit up.
Sure.
Okay. And when we go into a house and there's somebody inside that house, they're going to have to present something that shows that they're actually who they say they are. And sometimes one piece of ID ain't going to do it because sometimes we don't even know who the home belongs to. So it may take a little more than somebody just showing me a piece of ID before I'm going to believe what's going on. So there's a process that has to go through. You got to find out who the home actually belongs to first, and then you match it up with the ID. No different than I roll up on a guy who's trying to get into his own car because he's locked his keys in, and he says to me, oh, it's my car, no problem, officer, and then I just drive away, and the next thing you know, I'm taking a stolen car report. So I think that when you look at that situation with President Obama's friend, where the president in my opinion, was wrong when he said the officers acted stupidly.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you think Barack Obama said something like that? That's, you know, he's a pretty mild-mannered guy in most ways, and very, you know, he always tries to bring people together and what have you. And, you know, he's supposed to be post-racial. He tries to be bipartisan and all that.
Well,
why do you think he would say something like that?
How well do you know him?
Oh, I don't know him at all.
Okay, so then
his public demeanor. I mean, I think that what happened, you know, whether that had any racial content to it or not, and I don't know what happened there. You don't know what happened there. Let's have the best case scenario that that officer, what's his name again? You always
Crowley
had no racial intent, whatsoever. That it was just a matter, as you said, but that hit a chord in so many African American men. And that there's a pattern of that going on, you know, with white officers and black men, that African American mothers, you may have heard me say, have to tell their kids, make sure you say sir, never raise your voice. I mean, you know, what if you know, I started, you know, you came in my house and I said, hey, this is my house, get out of here, I don't know who the hell you are, you know, this is my castle, get the F out of here, you know, blah blah blah. And just insulting you, and I mean, come on! It goes with the job. You leave. You think, geez, what a jerk this guy is, right? I mean,
well, hey, it depends on what I'm going to your house for,
right?
If I'm going for a burglar type call where there's B&E, and you tell me to get out, I'm not going to leave until I verify who you are and who the house belongs to.
Absolutely, and that's your job.
Once I verify that, you call me whatever you want on the way out. That's fine. We routinely put up with verbal abuse on a regular basis, and I'll tell you something else. There's a misconception out there that people think that just because you call a cop a few names that you're going to get arrested for disorderly conduct. It doesn't work like that, Peter. You can't just arrest somebody and then all of a sudden you're going to court and you're going to win this in court because you're the police. It's not how it works. When I arrest somebody, I got to write a report.
Sure.
I'm on video and I'm on audio. Okay, that report has to go before my boss. After my boss looks at it and thinks there's enough for it to proceed, it goes to a detective bureau. A detective bureau then has to look at it, and then he's got to present those facts to a prosecutor. A prosecutor, and you don't know what color or what sex the prosecutor is going to be, has to look at that and approve it as well. And you better believe they're going to be looking at your video as well.
Do you think that in any way inhibits your ability to do your job?
No, I've been doing my job for 15 years.
Okay, well, that's good. And, I mean, what we saw, the result was that they dropped the charges against Gates. So that does kind of give me the idea that there was not, in fact, a violation of law involved there.
Okay, and I understand that, Peter. But just because they dropped the charges doesn't mean that what this officer did was necessarily wrong.
You know, okay. It's like
I'll
I said.
I've been sued two or three times, not really successfully, but I have been sued, and I didn't do anything wrong. Okay, I didn't do anything wrong, and I end up coming out on top. So there's going to be people that will say that officers did this wrong and officers did that wrong. But you know what the bottom line is that everybody can say what we did right or wrong, but until you wear the uniform and you deal with it day in and day out, you can't put yourself in my shoes. No different than I could say to a Vietnam vet that I know what he went through in Vietnam when I was never there.
Well, I mean, I hear that a lot, Greg. And there, obviously, in the kind of society we have to have a police apparatus. And yet, we're not talking about shoes. We're talking about policies. And maybe at the end of the day, maybe this will, I mean, like I was started off the show by saying how these right-wing commentators were just trying to manipulate and inflame this issue beyond, you know, beyond even what Barack Obama said, and they want to keep this alive. But maybe Gates, which just sounded at first maybe just like a little, you know, kind of rhetoric about this can be a teaching moment. Yeah, I mean, let's all kind of learn from it. I mean, Gates, you know, to me, like I said, confronting anyone, like I said, I can shout and scream. I could shout and scream at a dog catcher. I'm not going to shout and scream at a police officer. there, and not because, I mean, I wouldn't shout at any of them, but I would be worried about the reaction of any police officer in the United States if I started yelling at them. And, maybe I wouldn't have anything to worry about, but if I started yelling at a tax assessor, the guy might just get mad. I'd be worried about yelling at you, to be quite honest.
Let me put your mind at ease, Peter. 95% of the police officers nowadays, we all have video. And you know what? Before we had video, it didn't matter. If a guy yells at me and calls me names and calls me whatever, I can't just take the whooping. Okay? You can't just do that because at the end, you're going to lose your job. I've got a wife and kids to feed, and I'm sure a majority of the cops out there have a wife and kids to feed. We can't just do that. Now, are there some bad cops? There's a small percentage of people that discolor or taint the uniform.
You know, in every industry, in every profession, in every industry.
Right, but I can put. Let me put your mind at ease, and that just because you call an officer a name or you yell and scream at them doesn't mean that you're going to wind up down at the precinct.
Well, I'll tell you, with more and more safeguards and with more and more training and more officers having requiring a college degree or at least a two-year degree, as I said, things are changing. There still are rooted in these big city police forces, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, that it might as well be 1955. I mean, you may have seen last year the videos of those Chicago cops beating the crap out of some woman and what have you. I mean, those guys, or the attack that the L.A. cops made on that immigration rally that everybody agreed from the videos was unjustified. So
that poor lady who was like 75.
Yeah, I mean, so, where do you get the best cops? And these, all of the, I mean, I know a number of Detroit cops are going to kill me if they're listening, but you can usually get the best ones and the best trained and what have you in towns like New Baltimore. You start getting into the big city and all the big city problems, a lot of times that brings out the worst in guys. And by the way, when you say bad apples, I forgot what it is. Like 10% of the officers have like 80% of brutality complaints and stuff like that. You know, I mean, most officers have never shot their gun. Great numbers of them have never even brought them out of their holsters, right?
Well, that's true, Peter, but I think that when I look at an officer, I don't separate them from city to city or from geographical area because we really, at the end, we're all doing the same job. It comes down to run volume. I've gone on violent calls before, and I go on barking dogs just like any other officer does. You know what I mean? So I guess to separate it from a big city versus a small city. To me, there's a very small percent of officers that don't do the job, that taint the job and they taint the badge. The rest of us, we're all out here trying to do a good job. We're trying to protect the people. We're not the goons and the thugs that some people are putting us out to be.
Well, maybe criticism of the type that you find offensive is just part of the job. Look, unfortunately, Greg, I got to move on, but I appreciate your call. It took a particularly long time with you, and I'm glad to have given you a chance to express yourself. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. And, hey, if any of you Oakland County sheriffs are listening, I do not want to continue this conversation after work. I've had this experience before. Come here tomorrow.
Well, I have to say, that the deputy sheriffs that are around
they're
great. I mean, I remember one time a guy decided to roll underneath, and get into the property and scared the Jesus out of me. And I called those guys, and they were right here. And then they go, hey, could we get a tour of the RIF? I said, come on back. there's right. that. Of
yeah,
course.
Let me see. What is it? 10 to 1. I am going to be fast asleep at 1:30.
You are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can do that.
I know. I can't.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be fast asleep at 1:30. So, guys, if you're listening and you don't like what I said or you agree with what I said, I mean, I said a lot of things. Anyways, let's move on. Here is Tim. Tim's in Waterford. Go ahead, Tim. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Unfortunately, I didn't hear what your stance was on the current health care reform, but I wanted to weigh in. I think it's a travesty what they're trying to pull in Congress, and I don't believe they're acting in our best interest.
What do you think would be in our best interest, or what's in either way? What's wrong with what's going on, or what should be going on?
Well, I think we've got the best system in the world, and I believe it can be improved, and one of the biggest...
Wait. Tim, you think we have the best system in the world? It's one of the worst of all the industrialized countries. Nobody disagrees with that. No other country has a huge percentage of its population without any health care, another huge chunk of it with health care that totally sucks, another huge section of, let me put it this way, such an enormous part of health care dollars are spent on both profits for companies and administration. This is one of the worst. Listen, I get great health care. I'm one of the privileged elite in that regard, but there's no way in the world we have anywhere near the best healthcare system.
I disagree completely. Well, Every single person in this country, even if it's a drug runner that came over here and got appendicitis, when they show up at that emergency room, they're getting health care.
That's what George Bush said. Anybody can get health care in here, they can go to the emergency room.
I don't think it's that. We have heard horror stories on this show. I mean, I remember a few weeks ago this woman calling in saying that the hospital said she had to bring $8,000 to save her son's life or something.
No, that was not for the emergency room. No,
wasn't
I mean,
it?
Anybody,
no, that was for some kind of surgery.
And that's what happens. That's what happens, people, because there's such inadequate medical care in this country available to the, I don't know what the percentages are, probably to half the percentage of people, is that they can't even utilize the health care that they have if they have it. It's, you got to go look at the health systems of like Norway or Sweden or Denmark or places like that. I mean, these are places where health care is a matter of right. Everyone has the best health care. Everyone has health care access like I have. And actually, there's a little difference. I have to pay thousands of dollars of copays a year. They don't have to do that. I mean, maybe a different deal. They come out in their taxes. But,
I'd rather pay for that than these wars.
Sure. And that's what the
Any
money
day.
Is. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Here is Bob. Bob is in Windsor. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Thanks for making our program international.
How are you doing tonight?
We're doing good.
Good. Great show, man. I love you guys and you and Jolene. It's great.
Thank you.
I just wanted to bring up a Canadian point of view on the abuse of police power. I don't know if you guys heard about Robert Schakansky.
No.
In Vancouver a few years ago. There was a guy, he was Polish, coming over to visit
his
mother. Didn't speak a word of English.
Yeah.
Stuck in immigration. They passed him through immigration. He stood in the immigration center because they didn't bother to tell him that he could go for 15 hours. And when he finally got ticked off and started screaming at the employees, they called the RCMP. The RCMP boys, four of them, on their way down, this actually just came out a few weeks ago, discussed on their way down whether or not to taser this guy. So they go down there, and he gets in a big argument with them. There's a bit of shouting. He picks up a stapler, a stapler. They tasered him three times.
And he got on his... Yeah, he had a heart attack and died, right?
He had a heart attack and died.
Well, Greg from New Baltimore, the police officer, probably represents, the best that there is. But when you start, you really should do this. Google police brutality. Google taser, YouTube taser videos. Take a look at the recent stories of young men of color, primarily, that have been summarily shot by mistake, that they were reaching for their wallet, or they were, in case of this kid who was out in Oakland, was just shot in the back while he was handcuffed on the ground. I mean, there's great police abuse in this country, and I'm willing to take people at their word, and if Greg says he functions in the way he does, thank you, Greg, and thank you for all the police officers that that function like that. But it's not to say that there still doesn't remain a great amount of problems. All right, thank you very much. Here, I just want to get this. I can't see the name on here, but this caller from New Baltimore. Who's this?
Hi, my name's Steve.
Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, As far as like the New Baltimore police go, there's a lot of, you guys did a lot of glorifying of them, but the department is a little bit strange. We've had a couple murders, and a lot of things were, a lot of really unethical things happened.
Yeah, there was like a couple that was murdered there, right?
Yeah, with a couple, that's not what I'm talking about. There was a young teen, he actually went to my high school, and a couple other teens from my high school were actually accused of the murder, and they were forced to confess. And they actually had to spend 3 years in jail for 3 or so years, something like that, for, you know, crimes that they essentially did not commit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find with, like, New Baltimore police is, like, yes, they are very qualified. They're overqualified. They should be sent to the city where they are needed. But they are so damn bored, for the most part.
So damn what?
Bored.
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 Well, that's good.
Bored is good. You would think that. But here we are in the city, like, right here. We have the division of, you know, Detroit and, you know, the suburbs. There's all kinds of social context. It's a very complicated situation. But we have very little enforcement where it is most needed, and way too much where it is not needed. And it creates all kinds of social problems.
Well, we're going to have to let it go at that because I'm almost out of time. I've got to take one last caller. Sarah, hi. You're on the air. You got about a minute. So give me your headlines. Sarah, hi. Sarah. Okay, no Sarah. All right, Jolene, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, and
thank you, Roger, for answering the phones for us.
You know, let everybody, for one thing, the whole world would be a lot better if when met with anger, that one would just take a deep breath and let the other person be angry. So like I said, this is everything in our homes.
Such a huge lesson, yeah.
At our
workplace,
relationships. Anybody. I mean, it's not just the police and civilians. And what I said earlier, because someone's trying to insult you doesn't mean you have to be insulted.
True.
Right. All right. With that sage advice.
Picking up that skin.
Yes. thank you so much for listening and for calling. Stay tuned. A wonderful interview with a man who has done so much to tell us what American history is really all about. It's Howard Zinn. And this will all be as a podcast available at WRIF.com. Tuesday at noon. And we'll talk next week.
Absolutely.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Did I win?
I won?
Thursday.
Dude, are you serious?
I'll take this Thursday exclusively from your walk right in free station. 101.
Who are you?
WRIF.
I love you.
Is your debt getting bigger? Are you falling behind on your bills and receiving collection calls? Well, it's not your fault. Millions of Americans are buried in credit card debt because of a job loss, divorce, medical bills, or just bad luck. But now there's a way you can get debt-free faster than you ever imagined. Call Credit Guard of America today for free information, and you'll learn how you can cut your monthly payments by up to half, lower or even eliminate your interest rates, and stop the collection calls once and for all. For free information, call 1-800-709-6136.
We owed $25,000 to the credit card companies. This year, we're going to be debt-free.
Credit Guard of America won't just help you get debt-free. We'll even show you how to improve your credit status.
They helped me pay off 10 credit cards and rebuild my credit rating.
Call us today to learn how you can cut your monthly payments by up to half and get debt-free. For free information, call 1-800-709-6136. That's 1-800-709-6136.
101 WRIF, WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I've interviewed historian Howard Zinn about his monumental, and I'll tell you why it's monumental in just a minute, a people's history of the United States and its different incarnations on several different occasions. And there's a brand new one. Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States has sold over 2 million copies. I got to tell you, people, if you sell 150,000 books, you're on the New York New York Times bestseller list. So 2 million. And every time I talk to Howard Zinn, he says, well, and then he tells me that the figure has gone up. When I do phone-in talk shows, people start talking to me about this or that, about American history. One of the things I often say is go read Howard Zinn before you call back, because if you want to get a clear understanding of the history of the United States and how it fashions for today, that's a terrific place to start. So joining me from the Boston area is Howard Zinn. Howard, welcome back to the Peter Werbe Show.
Oh, thank you, Peter. I'm always happy to talk with you and talk with Detroit.
Yes.
And everybody else who is listening.
Well, you have a brand new book out, another incarnation of A People's History of the United States. This is called A Young People's History of the United States. And I should say to people, I didn't list or name all the books of yours other than the history of the United States, but people should go to Howard Zinn, that's ZINN.org. There's a list of them. I'll just say one of my personal favorites is You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, A Personal History of Our Times. Howard Zinn's been involved in a lot of it, from World War II through the Civil Rights Movement and continuing the anti-war movement and so much. So this isn't just abstract history for the last several decades. It's history that Howard Zinn has lived. A Young People's History of the United States, and it was adapted, I should say, by Rebecca Stefoff. Why this? Why a young people's history?
Well, you know, for years people would approach me when I was speaking somewhere, or they would write to me, and they would say, well, you know, your people's history is readable, and I'm happy to hear that, of course, and you know, not academic, but however, young people, you know, maybe 10, 11, 12, it would be good if you could have a version of your book which younger people could read, and you know, maybe young people are not accustomed to going through a 700-page book that doesn't even have any pictures in it. And so Rebecca Stefoff, and with the aid of Seven Stories Press, I mean, Seven Stories Press was not the original publisher of A People's History, Harper Collins was, but Seven Stories Press has done a number of my books, and they had Rebecca Stefoff put together this adaptation, which means really that she sort of shortened it a little. She added some illustrations. In fact, I think one of the great features of this book is it has these full-page illustrations of wonderful scenes, you know, from American history. You know, you'll see Eugene Debs on the public platform. You'll see Emma Goldman. You'll see all sorts of scenes from American labor struggles, or Native Americans, or Chief Joseph, Tecumseh, and you know, you'll see, well, from the early period when there were no pictures, you'll see drawings and etchings of let's say the Indians and the Arawaks and their treatment by Columbus. So I think to Rebecca Stefoff did a wonderful job, and in fact, if you look at the cover of the book, also just sort of a sign of how different it is, because the people's history of the United States, I must say, has a very naked cover.
Yes.
There's nothing on it, no illustration, you know, just my name and the name of the book, A People's History of the United States. But this, the cover of A Young People's History, has a wonderful shot of kids, working class kids, sort of gathered together with their teacher. These are kids who sort of drew up a children's Declaration of Right, in which these kids asked that children not be allowed to work in the mines and factories at the age of 10 and 12. So, anyway.
When's the photograph?
I don't want to talk too much about my, of course, I don't want to talk too much about my book, only maybe for, 10 hours or so.
Well, you should. You should be very proud. And, I mean, when you first published, let me take you back to 1980. So that's almost 30 years ago when People's History of the United States was first published. Was the original publisher, HarperCollins, were they enthusiastic about it, or did they...
Nobody was enthusiastic about that. Is it seemed like just another history book thrown into the ring, Let's put it this way. They did not expect it to become a big seller, and neither did I, for that matter. It's very rare. Well, you were saying this, Peter. It's very rare for a history book, to sell in hundreds of thousands of copies. And, in fact, in the first few years, it didn't. HarperCollins published... They printed 4,000 hardback copies. And when those 4,000 hardback copies were sold, then they put it out in 1981 in paperback, and maybe it sold 10,000. And then suddenly, to everybody's surprise, every year it would sell more and more. And the editor of HarperCollins told me that not too long ago, in fact, he told us at a gathering, a meeting, celebrating the millionth copy, he said, HarperCollins has published thousands of history books, thousands of all kinds of books. He said he didn't remember, as a longtime editor, didn't remember any book that sold more each year than the year before. The usual pattern is different. The usual pattern is, you sell most of your copies the first year, and then it keeps going down. But no, People's History sells every year at least 100,000 copies.
Well, is it, I said, every time when you've been on the show, and I'll say going back a few years, People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn has sold 750,000. You'd say, it's up to 900,000. And then I remember I said, it was 1,000,000. You said, it's actually 1,250,000. So I said 2,000,000 this time. Yeah, is there...
I'm always correcting people because, I'm insulted if somebody gives a figure, that's five less.
Sure. Well, as a historian, we want accuracy.
Exactly.
So are we at 2,000,000 plus for People's History of the United States?
The important thing about these numbers, of course, is aside from me bragging the important thing about it is, and this is something my editor at HarperCollins and I were talking about, the important thing is that it's an indication that there are several million people out there in the country who have been eager for a different look at American history, who have been eager for a look which is different than the one they got in school, because the people remember what they got in school, it's what I got in school, probably, Peter, what you got in school, and that was the rah-rah version of American history, we're the greatest, we're the best, we win the wars, and we're the great economic miracle of modern times, and we have our little problems, maybe, like slavery, but we overcome them. And so it's all very triumphalist and exceptionalist. But, by exceptionalist, I mean that the U.S. is an exception in the world, that, there are other countries which do mean things, all these other empires, maybe, the British Empire and the Dutch Empire and the Japanese, but not the American Empire. We only do good in the world. So the fact that there's millions of people out there who are looking for a different look at American history, I know it's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. The new book from Howard Zinn has been adapted by Rebecca Stefoff from Seven Stories Press, and it's called A Young People's History of the United States. Howard Zinn, what if someone said, this is a left-wing history of the United States? Is that accurate?
left-wing history. I like that. Well, it depends on what you mean by left-wing. You know, it's like, you know, if President Obama calls for a slight raise in taxes on the rich, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, that's socialism. And so here you have a history that emphasizes class struggle in the United States, that says, oh, you know, there have always been people from the very beginning in this country who ruled this country. They were the rich from the founding fathers on. And there's always been a struggle and a conflict between the rich running the country and working people or farmers who were the victims of the people who ran the country. There's always been a conflict all through American history. Well, that's class. That's a reality. If you want to call that left wing, well, call it what you will. But the term left wing sort of brands it as something sort of way out, and but it's, I don't believe it's way out and extreme to tell the truth about our country. And if you tell the truth about, you know, for instance, American imperialism, American expansion, about how we moved westward across the continent and the course of it wiped out Indian tribes and attempted really to wipe out all of Indian civilization. Well, is that left wing? That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you, you know, I was thinking of Pete Seeger's old song, What Did You Learn in School Today? And so, like you mentioned, Howard Zinn, about what you and I were taught, and you described it very accurately. And so that would be said that that is objective history. Howard Zinn writes ideologically driven history. I'm continuing this. I mean, you really did answer it all. But
I like that, ideologically driven history versus objective history. Well, you know, one of the points I make in at the very beginning of my people's history is, as you know, Peter, I always love to point to the point to points that I make.
Sure.
But one of the points I make is that there's no such thing as objectivity in history. All history has a point of view. The only question is whether it's concealed or whether it's open and honest. All history has a point. It has to have a point of view because all history is selective. You can't tell everything. You have to tell only part of this enormous amount of data that there is in history. Well, you select. Now, when you select on the basis of what you think is important. And everybody has a different idea of what is important. So it can't be objective. It's subjective. It depends on, you know, you, your interest. And so objectivity is just, you know, you can't do it. We all have a point of view. The difference is I say right out, look, this is my point of view. My point of view is egalitarian. My point of view is I want to look at how black people have lived in this country, in this society. I want to look at how working people have lived. I want to look at how people have struggled back against those who oppress them. And does that mean it's ideological? Of course, I'm saying all history is ideological. It's just that they throw out these words, left-wing, ideological, et cetera, as kind of scare words. I think we should be honest about what we teach people about this country.
Howard Zinn is my guest in the Peter Werbe Show. You can go to Howard Zinn, ZINN.org, and see all of the books that he has authored over the years. This is a new one that we're talking about. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to sevenstories.com. It's a young people's history of the United States. Actually, I think it's fabulous. I'd love to see all of these graphics, the photographs, and then the drawings in the so so-called adult version. Let me just say parenthetically before you respond, though, I was just having dinner last night with a friend of mine who's a middle school teacher in a Detroit suburb, and he said, the kids must be 13, what are they now, 12, 13, and 14, and he says that he uses the full version of A People's History of the United States. But go ahead.
Well, you know, a lot of people, teachers included, do not yet know of the existence of a young people's history. So even for young people, middle school people, they will use the regular edition of People's History, which is fine, which is what everybody did before this young people's edition came along. And, you know, and so it's maybe stretches the abilities of middle school people a little to read my people's history. But I'm gratified always to know that the people's history that I wrote originally, even before the young people's history came out, can be read by middle school kids. Because, you know, truth is, Peter, I never learned how to write academically. Maybe it's because I didn't enter the academy until, 10 years after high school. I didn't go to college until 10 years after high school, because I was a shipyard worker and I was in the Air Force and I knocked around job to job. And so my life, was with people who were not college professors or college students, or working people, or GIs, and so I just naturally, when I began to write, I was writing for those people. I was not writing for scholars. I was writing for working people and people who could just people who were intelligent, sure, and curious, and who weren't accustomed to highfalutin language. And I didn't know highfalutin language very well myself. When I come across words like dichotomy and and paradigm, they're words that when I come across them, I immediately close the book.
Well, there's also, your work has taken so many different shapes, including a recently published A People's History of American Empire, which is a comic adaptation of your A People's History of the United States. Very, very attractive book, as is this new one. You should get Harper Collins to include all of these photographs. Having some familiarity with publishing, getting this many photographs and other work and getting releases for them must have been an absolutely tremendously difficult job.
Absolutely. But that's a good idea, Peter. That I think that's why I'm on your radio program, because maybe occasionally I get a good idea from you.
Well, you ought to tell HarperCollins you're going to give it to Dutton or something like that.
Good idea. HarperCollins should put out an edition, a regular edition of People's History, and use those photographs from Seven Stories Press. And I was just thinking of a photograph I saw of these two kids holding this sign from the Depression era, signs that said, "Why can't you give my daddy a job?"
Yeah, well, that would work.
And then
today,
I think, yeah.
Well, let's get back a little to historia.
Sure.
You might just say I don't want to talk anymore. I'm going to use one of those big words, historiography. I mean, the approach to history. And so, if you would, talk about the official account of the bravery of the Columbus sailing across the ocean and, quote, discovering this new world, and how it is approached in both the new A Young People's History of the United States, and how it begins on the full version of A People's History of the United States. So, I mean, how the official history in a way, and then how it's presented in your books.
Of course, the official history is one that everybody learned. And it's amazing, isn't it, that here we are, we're a democratic country, pride ourselves in democracy and openness and open marketplace of ideas, and yet the same, exactly the same attitude towards Christopher Columbus has been presented to generation after generation after generation, even though the evidence existed in our libraries that this was all a distorted picture, because the official picture was, yes, Columbus the great man, Columbus the adventurer, the courageous person, religious person, did this fantastic feat of crossing the ocean and, quote, discovering America, what they left out, and of course that's what our people's history does, what they omitted was that Columbus was not simply coming on this voyage for the purpose of spreading Christianity or for the purpose of advancing navigational science or discovering new worlds. In fact, he didn't think he would discover a new world. He thought he was just finding a new route to Asia, to Japan. But his real interest was not scientific or religious. His real interest was gold. His real interest was riches to bring back to those financiers in Europe who had financed his trip. He was the first imperialist. And his story about him is a typical story about imperialism. Oh, we're going into, we're the advanced civilized country, and we're going into these backward countries to spread democracy and civilization and so on. But no, imperialism means going into these countries to find out what they have that we can use to put these people to work for low wages and to exploit them. And Columbus, put these people, these Indians, to work in the mines and had them looking for gold. And if they didn't bring him enough gold, he cut off their arms. They were killed. If they resisted, they were hung. Many of them were kidnapped and enslaved, brought on ships back to Spain to sort of, you might say, souvenirs of the conquest of the Indies. And so we tell a truth, and the young people's history tells the same story. It simplifies it a little in the language and doesn't tell all the details, but it tells the same basic story. And I want to say this. Very often they say, oh, you shouldn't tell young people terrible things. Like, as if you can tell it to older people, but not the young people. No. It's odd that they should say this, since young people are subjected on television and in the movies to the most horrible scenes of violence. But you mustn't tell them that this violence is committed by people that we have glorified in our history books. That those people we have glorified, like Theodore Roosevelt and Andrew Jackson and Woodrow Wilson, and yes, not just the conservative presidents, but the liberal presidents, they've presided over terrible scenes of violence done to other people. So we're trying to correct that picture.
I only got about 30 seconds left with you, Howard Zinn, but when this is used in schools, is there ever objections to it by parents or...
There was initially, there probably still is, and by some, but the interesting thing is that when it first was pronounced in schools, teachers were a little timid about using it. Now it's used in schools all over the country, and whole departments use it, and whole schools use it, and there probably still are parents who object, and there probably still are school administrators or certainly legislators. But despite that, I think it has had a power of its own which has propelled it beyond these objections into schoolrooms all over the country.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, I want to thank you so much, as usual, Howard Zinn, for being on the Peter Werbe Show. You can go to Howard Zinn, ZINN.org. The book, the latest incarnation of A People's History of the United States, is A Young People's History, and it's published by Seven Stories Press, sevenstories.com. You go to my website as well, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and there will be a link on it as well. Alice Walker, the poet and playwright and novelist, said Howard Zinn was the best teacher I ever had, and I'm sure you like this as well, Howard, the funniest, right?
Thank you. I like people. Alice Walker, yes.
Thank you so
She's
much.
The best.
Thank you so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you so much, Peter. Happy to be on it.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this. Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riffed rock.
The way you want it.
Double shot of rock.
See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
This is my way to learn Spanish.
This is my way to learn French.
My way to learn Russian.
Italian.
Japanese.
My way.
My way.
Chinese.
My way to learn a foreign language.
The best way to learn a foreign language is your way. Rosetta Stone invites you to try absolutely free a software program developed around the way you think and the way you learn. The same way you learned your first language. In fact, it's been recognized as the fastest, easiest way to learn a language, guaranteed.
It's totally my way to learn Spanish.
No classrooms, no boring drills, no useless memorization. It's a learning program that works around you, not the other way around. And right now you can try it absolutely, positively free with a free demo CD-ROM.
Free. That's definitely my way.
Try Rosetta Stone for free by calling 1-800-441-3955. 1-800-441-3955. For your free demo, call 1-800-441-3955.
There's something happening across America. People aren't just calling themselves DirecTV customers. They're calling themselves fans. That's because DirecTV has exclusive sports packages like NFL Sunday Ticket and free NASCAR Hot Pass. DirecTV has the most HD channels with over 130, soon to be over 200, and 50 times more movies available than 1080p. Perhaps that's why DirecTV is ranked number one in customer satisfaction among all TV service providers. So don't just watch TV. Become a huge fan. Switch to DirecTV today. Call 1-888-359-5566. There's no equipment to buy and no startup costs. Packages start at just $29.99 a month. Call 1-888-359-5566. That's 1-888-359-5566. Sports subscriptions sold separately. New customers only on approved credit. Credit card required except Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. Hardware lease and programming commitment required and available separately. Other conditions apply. Call for details.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. I just was looking at the Detroit Free Press, no longer a daily, three times a week. Of course, that's a better fate than the Ann Arbor News that has ceased publication. And many, many daily publications have stopped publishing. Some magazines have either fallen by the wayside. Print media, print journalism, looks like it's got a real problem. And journalism in general does. And we're fortunate that Extra, that's the magazine of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. You can go to fair.org, takes up for its current edition. Joining me from their New York office, the Fair, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting office, is Jim Narikas. He's the editor-in-chief. Welcome back to the Peter Werbe Show, Jim.
Hi, thanks for having me up.
Yeah, editor-in-chief, gee, that sounds like almost, you know, what was Superman's editor's name? Perry White, right? I mean,
right.
I think the point being, I'm not making fun of you, of course, but rather that a lot of the assumptions that people are still applying in the 21st century have almost were outdated by the end of the 20th, right?
It's true. When people talk about the future of journalism and worry about where it's going, I think people have to also worry about where it is right now and where it's been. I think that the system that is breaking down now of advertiser-supported journalism, for-profit journalism, has not worked that well in terms of providing the information that people need. It hasn't informed us about the, you know, given us a heads up about the economic crises that were coming. It hasn't given a critical look at the information that has been used to sell us on various wars. When you need the press to help you out and tell you what's going on, it really has not been there for us.
No, it hasn't.
And so when we're thinking about the future of journalism, we don't want to just preserve journalism as it is. We want to think about how could journalism be better? How could it better serve the public?
Well, when I, from time to time, have given talks about the media, I usually start with saying, how many people think the media is doing its job? And naturally, no one in the room, if they've come to hear me, will raise their hand. And I say, am I the only person in the room that thinks that the media is doing its job? Essentially, what I mean is the corporate media. So they've been a source of disinformation for probably the last 150 years. So has there ever been a period in, I mean, I know there's lots of exceptions, and you might want to mention those, but that we have been able to count on the mainstream corporate media that isn't interested in delivering news, right? They're interested in a profit through selling advertising, has, quote, done its job.
Well, I think, you know, when you look back on journalism over the ages, you see the high points. Those are the people who stand out. And they stand out because they have done the job that you're supposed to do. You tend to forget the many people who are doing sort of water carrying for the people in power, which is has tended to be the traditional role for journalism, in the society and across the world, and that is related, I think, to the people who the people who own the press. Are the ones who are going to decide what is being printed, and so you do have a natural tendency for when you have a set of wealthy owners who are dependent on corporate advertisers for their income to skew the news towards the interests of that class.
Well, given that, having said that, should we bemoan the fact that some of these publications are going under? And I mean, doesn't this kind of, in many ways, clear the slate? And maybe we can start all over again with something that will serve the needs of the people to get information and create a more lively debate.
Yeah, I don't want to be too, sort of Pollyanna about it. I think that people are losing their livelihoods, that, people have built their careers, and are feeding their families with the system as it is. So I don't want to act like there's not pain involved in these changes. But, part of the reason that the papers are closing down is not because they're not making money, but they're not making the really high profit rates that the media industry is used to. Newspapers used to be one of the most profitable businesses around, and TV stations as well. And that derives from the fact that they often have kind of a local monopoly. They're the only place in town that you can go to advertise, and or to find out what's going on in the community. And that monopoly situation allows them to make a lot more money than most businesses make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that monopoly is eroding now, because people who have access to the internet have access to hundreds, if not thousands, of newspapers around the world. They don't have to rely on the local daily to get their news anymore. And so, as that as the monopoly is collapsing, the profits are dropping rapidly, and that's bad news, both for the owners and for the people who work for these papers. But it you really can't say that it's bad news for the public that more people have access to more sources of information. That's really a good thing.
Well, I often make the point that now you read editorials in the New York Times, which I use frequently in my work, and they say things about the George Bush administration that when I said them on the radio, when I was doing a nationally syndicated show, is that I lost station after station because at the time, I mean, it was, someone said I was a premature George Bush hater.
Right.
But at the time of the run-up to the Iraq War, I mean, that not only did the New York Times enthusiastically support that conflict, but it reported the absolute worst. Its journalism was among the absolute worst. How do I know that? Because I read publications that you edit, Jim Noreika. It's like Extra and go online to fair.org. But the majority of Times readers would have just thought, Saddam Hussein must have weapons of mass destruction, because here I read it in this prestigious paper, and it had, it cites all these, well, I guess, confidential sources, unnamed because of national security. But now that it's all over, of course, the Times is willing to pile on with the rest of us as to what happened. So there are instances. And I mean, on the other hand, since that, the Times has acted very admirably in some of the things that they've exposed, the worst attacks on the Constitution that the Bush administration carried out. And there has been good journalism, even in the Detroit Free Press, and I have friends that work there. So how do we sort this all out? I mean, in terms of what's valuable about the old journalism and what can be preserved, and what is, good, goodbye to bad rubbish.
Yeah, I think that preserving the best and creating more space for more of that kind of journalism that we need is really what we're after. And I think that, there will, I believe, always be space for for-profit newspapers, media outlets like the New York Times. And I think that they will probably concentrate more on sort of investigative reporting, the kind of things that you can't find just anywhere. If they want to maintain a presence in the marketplace, but I think that we're going to find that these sorts of for-profit outlets are not going to be enough in the future, and that we will need to see media supported by like nonprofit foundations, which you're beginning to see these things cropping up. Traditionally, foundations have been reluctant to fund media, like isn't their business. Interestingly, the right-wing foundations have always seen funding right-wing publications as something that they were interested in, but the foundations of the center and the left have shown much less interest. And I think that's going to change. I think that people will see that the for-profit model is not going to do everything that they want, and you're going to need to see a much more active nonprofit model of news reporting and distributing information.
Mm-hmm. Jim Noreika is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's the editor-in-chief of Extra. It's the publication of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. You can go to fair.org. And maybe just as a footnote, Jim, you could just go back and we talk about the right-funding newspapers. Probably the most egregious example is that of the Sun-Yat Moon people that finance right-wing papers all over the world, right, including the Washington Times, which is a financial, it's no free market there. They wouldn't be in business if it was a free market model. But maybe just quickly tell us to the extent of which the Reverend Moon people fund papers.
Yeah, the Washington Times is it's sort of the other paper in Washington, D.C., after the Washington Post. And for the Republican establishment in D.C., it is the daily paper. It's their paper of choice. And it's run by a very peculiar individual, Sun Myung Moon, who has announced that he is the Messiah and is going to do the job that Jesus flubbed in his messiahhood. He's sort of explicitly a theocrat against democracy. He said really bitterly hateful things towards America, and sort of an odd person to be running the paper of the Republican Party in D.C. But there you have it. And you know, he does lose a lot of money on the Washington Times. It's not a profit-making venture. So he's got to believe that he's getting something out of the millions and millions of dollars that he's put into that. And presumably what he's getting is influence by having a paper that the right wing in D.C. relies on.
And he finances papers all over the world as well.
Yeah, and I believe he's got papers in Korea and Japan,
Brazil.
Latin America.
Brazil, I think.
But, you know, Rupert Murdoch does the same thing. You know, the New York Post has been losing money for years, and yet he keeps it open as an outlet for his right-wing editorial views and for there's political power that you get from having a paper that is a political player in the financial and media capital of the country.
Well, let's do this. Let's go through a little of the special issue that talks about the future of journalism. This still brings us back to the 20th century and that medium that continues on, although the desperately wounded, and that is the print media. Is it curtains for it? I mean, are we going to wind up to be a paperless, magazineless society?
Well, you know, people are turning to the internet more and more, and in some ways it's not a bad thing. You know, the idea that information will no longer be delivered on dead trees is not necessarily something to be mourned. It's not a particularly efficient way of getting information to people. On the other hand, it is a lot of the current institutions that do valuable reporting are quite dependent on it, and are finding that it's and I speak from personal experience here that it's much easier to get people to pay for a print subscription to a magazine than to get them to pay for an online magazine. And so while, you know, you're getting information to more people more efficiently, you know, faster, cheaper, the way that you sustain the production of that information is not as clear. And that's part of what we're grappling with in this special issue is what kind of models are going to provide that information. One thing we talk about is the citizen journalism model, which is essentially journalism as a volunteer project, as a labor of love, distributed among, you know, various people, and kind of like the Wikipedia model of journalism, where everyone puts in a little bit of what they've seen and added together, it becomes a picture of the world.
Now, there was some trust, though, at some point, for better or for worse, that people had, that there was a scrupulousness that was attached to professional journalists, and they would, in fact, give the information as they saw it, and the editors would be consistent with that mission. Although, as we said earlier, I'm not quite so sure that occurred. And I don't know if but the idea is that people say, and the criticism of Wikipedia is, you can put anything down there. I mean, there's, I was going to say this in one way, I'll say it another. I mean, someone I know who's got a wiki entry keeps having it maliciously altered, right?
Right.
So if you went to it today, you'd go, oh my God, that's a terrible person. But it's done subtly and it's done to misrepresent the kind of politics the person has. So, you know, if you hit it at that day, you would say, oh, well, it's so. That question that the sophomores always ask one another at 2 a.m. in the morning, you know, what is reality? I mean, that's a tough one.
Yeah, the Wikipedia is a fascinating experiment, I think, and it's true that you often do, you know, anyone can put anything up there, and it is supposed to be a system where you have enough eyes on it to correct the misinformation and the maliciousness that sometimes goes on. It tends to work worse with subjects that are relatively obscure, where people are not, you don't have that many people interested in it, so that one person who is interested in being a jerk can have an impact on an article, which is harder to do in articles that have a lot more people paying attention to them. And in fact, sometimes the most controversial articles on Wikipedia are the best articles, in that both sides are really demanding that each side produce documentation for any claims that support that position, and don't let the other side get away with anything. And I think that in some ways it compares favorably to the corporate media model where you have a journalist who just by virtue of their position says, well, I'm the authority and I say that these are the important facts. And the reader is basically left to take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there a generational factor here as well? I was going to, I was going to say, to me, the disappearance of print media, even the ones I'm disparaging of, is a real loss. I mean, I like to be able to sit down and read a paper in the morning and go through magazines, and sometimes I'll stop and think, wow, maybe even sometimes if it's something I'm really interested, go look up another, some more information on it. But I was going to say I was old school, but probably somebody under 25 would just say I'm old. And their platform of choice is not going to be, they're going to be sitting in a coffee shop with a laptop, surfing the web. I really sound like surfing the web. I knew the verb. And to them, no loss. I mean, here's the information. It's you can you can go through any number of sites, and so I think that's the one thing that maybe I didn't say it directly enough that you haven't answered. Is the loss of print media actually a loss?
I think that you do. There are things that are great about print. The sort of portability of it, the permanence of it. You can cut it out and you can mail it to your mom. You can, there's a lot that
your mom who doesn't have the internet, because someone's going to say, well, wait a minute, you could send any article to somebody on the internet, and don't people do that to me a lot? But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that you have. There's a lot of things that you can't do with print that you can do with the internet. There's pluses and minuses to every medium. I think that when people stopped copying manuscripts by hand, not only did you throw a lot of monks out of work, but you lost the sort of craftsmanship of the individually handmade book, and probably the amount of study that went into producing each book led to a deeper understanding of the texts than you had from the people working in Gutenberg's shop, just turning them out. But on the other hand, you gained, books became much cheaper and much more widely distributed. You had an explosion of literacy. So in each stage of the evolution of communications, you have losses and gains, and I think that people sometimes do tend to focus on the things that they love about the current system, and are not thinking enough about what the next world is going to be like, and I think that by thinking about what you do love about things as they are, you need to think about, how do we preserve that? How do we keep the best of what we have now, and still take advantage of the possibilities of new technologies and new relationships between the, creators and readers, the public having more of a chance for feedback and for actual involvement in creating the news.
Well, two things at a minimum strike me. One is that we're supposed to live in the age of information, but people don't seem demonstrably smarter or even more informed. I'm not, you know, some people would even say dumber. I'm not saying that. I'm saying there doesn't seem to be any leap forward in people's knowledge about the world. And the other thing is that 50 years ago, newspapers cost a nickel, and now it costs you, if you start factoring in everything that's involved in electronic media, from, you know, the cost of the hardware to being DSL lines and phone bills and all that, it's a pretty costly undertaking, and one that has enriched another sector of the economy where the publications used to have the print publications used to get all the money.
I think it's there's a strong human predisposition to see the past as a golden age, and you know, I don't know that people aren't better informed now than they were even when I was starting out in journalism. My first job was at an alternative paper called In These Times out of Chicago.
Sure.
And you know, I think that it was very hard to find In These Times. It was available at a handful of sort of obscure bookstores across the country. I think that, you know, you had to really be kind of in the know to know about it. And now, you know, if you go to inthesetimes.com, I think is the URL, you can read what they have to say. And I think that probably a lot more people are reading it now than were reading it back then. They're having financial troubles because, again, it's hard to get people to pay for information that seems like it ought to be free on the internet. But I think their audience is probably bigger than ever, and more people are taking part in political discussions, you know, via the many online outlets that people have. I think things like Daily Coast, which has a real model for kind of grassroots participation in the discussion, is a model that has a lot of appeal. I think that there is the things that are hopeful in the current situation, and one can imagine I could hope for a much better informed public and a much more actively involved citizenry. But I think that some of the tools for having that kind of society are here and need to be exploited.
Well, Jim Narikas, I want to thank you for being on the program. Jim is the editor-in-chief of Extra, and Extra is the magazine of fairness and accuracy in reporting. You should go to fair.org. It has so many ways to look at journalism and reporting, and on some of these same stations you can listen to Counterspin, and as a very valuable on-the-air look at the week's occurrences and how they're reported. The publications as well, and also online. A lot of stuff there as well. You can also go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Jim Narikas, thanks for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Did I win?
Blitz.
I won?
Thursday.
Dude, are you serious?
All day this Thursday, exclusively from your Walk Right In Free Station, 101.
Who are you?
WRIF.
I love you.
Did you know that most credit counselors are working for the credit card companies? It's true. They're practically collection agencies themselves. Don't turn over your financial future to them, because I've got a system that can eliminate your debt once and for all. To prove it, I'll send you a powerful free tape today.
I owed over $30,000 in credit card debt, and today, only a year and a half later, I owe no money to the credit card companies.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't consolidate your debt, it eliminates it, using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
I'm completely debt-free now, thanks to John Commuta.
Don't hand over your future to credit counselors. Call now, and I'll rush you my free tape today. Call 1-800-600-5460 for your free tape. Call 1-800-600-5460. 1-800-600-5460.
Did you know that tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, which costs you up to 25% more. That's an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy. With HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents line scale buildup in your entire plumbing system, guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com.
Very, very volatile and dangerous for these kids.
101 WRIF.